this week. Digital game sales reached an all-time high in March. Not in the news tonight, water is wet. It's a safe bet that sales in April will be even higher. And also not in the news tonight, water is a liquid. Stay tuned for the news you may not have already heard or guessed, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Orange Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, live tonight with episode number 817 of our show for this April the 26th of 2020. My name is Rob Roberts with the hiccups, excuse me, sorry, and I am joined by nobody in studio because, again, we're still doing social distancing like I think most people in the world are still at this point with everything going on, and I hope everybody's hanging in there okay. I'm hanging here with Captain Pikachu with his giant oversized Famicom controller here in the studio because, unfortunately, my co-hosts are not able to be here in the studio with me, but they are able to join me on Discord. So say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
I'm generally always full of Discord. You know that.
You are, but especially so on Sunday nights, right?
Yeah, because, you know, reasons.
And how are you hanging in there during this whole thing?
Well, believe it or not, I am still having the lung problem.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was taken off work for like another week and a half.
Oh, wow.
But I'm on like some hardcore medication again, just something different this time. And It seems to be helping. So I go back to work tomorrow and see how it goes. But I also did get a rotation I applied for the first week I came back to work. So I'm pretty excited.
Well, congratulations. That's a good thing, right?
May the odds be ever in my favor.
It's like you got a birthday present from your work. Mm. That's wonderful.
Here, more responsibility. Enjoy.
Well, I hope
I
hope everything went well with your birthday in light of the crazy stuff going on in the world. Did you get a lot of people visiting you in Animal Crossing, leaving you presents?
Actually, yeah, I did. Well, four people left me presents, sorry.
Okay.
One person gave me money, which was great, and then I got some songs that I wanted, which is funny. I wanted DJ KK, and like 2 days later, it showed up in my store.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, I was already given it, so yay.
Yay.
But thank you, RNG, I guess.
Isn't that the way it goes? You go out of your way to try to get something special, and then the next day it's like, oh, it's just in your nooks or, you know, whatever.
Or,
just ready to
or
go.
Or as Gwen calls it, RNGesus.
Yes, yes. Well, that's a term that goes way back to Final Fantasy XI for me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, random number generator has been a gaming thing since you could do that. So
since you rolled dice. In the 70s, for probably
much.
Even before that, really, honestly. So
yeah,
all right.
But at any rate, it was great, and I have to thank Brad for the elaborate kimono stand. I really, or is exquisite or elaborate, one or the other. But I really like it. I super wanted it, and someone bought it before I had a chance to in the game, and I was like, it was happening to me like days in a row. I was so mad. And finally, like two of the things I super wanted, people gave to me, and I'm like, well, thank you. You are quality humans. Nice. Songs will be sung about you off key and not by me.
All right. Well, I owe you at least a dinner or some other type of treat when we are allowed to see each other again, which hopefully won't be, you know, another year. But hopefully in the coming months, we can at least hang out in small groups. But we'll see. Right. So
we'll see.
We'll see. All right. Say hello as well. Joining us on Discord to Techmaster Loki.
Hello.
Hello. Coming to us with his Rock Band microphone, which I still love.
I am, yes.
Do you actually play Rock Band with that microphone anymore?
I don't play Rock Band at all. It's all in the garage, falling apart.
I miss the plastic instrument days, man. Like, I know Rock Band 4 maybe wasn't quite, because, I mean, it was hard to get people to buy into Rock Band 4 when it was like, hey, we took stuff away from Rock Band 3, and now we just kind of replicated the Rock Band 2 formula. I know Rock Band 4 got a lot stronger with an expansion later on, but you know, you gotta really come out the gate roaring. But I miss those plastic instruments days, man. I wish good times.
Yeah, I'd have to hook the Xbox 360 back up in order to play all that, so I mean, probably won't do that anytime soon.
Like, I know in this era of social distancing, a lot of people are doing Jackbox games. Like, those Jackbox games are probably more popular than they ever have been. And they were already pretty popular beforehand. Now they're, like, super popular. And I feel like if Rock Band had had a more recent release, we might be seeing more Rock Band parties virtually online. But sadly, I mean, I'm sure somebody's playing it, but probably just not as many as you'd hope.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, my co-hosts are joining me, and you guys are joining me in the chat room over at twitch.tv/VOG Network, the Voice of Geeks Network, where we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Black Wolf show. So if you are listening to our fair podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you get your podcasts, don't forget that you can actually join in on a live taping on Sunday nights. And I know with a lot of people staying at home, as you should be right now, you probably look looking for more things to do on Sunday nights. So please come on over and say hello over at Twitch TV. Going to the Twitch chat room for some comments. Bobby Blackwolf is there saying, I want them to re-release new Rock Band instruments because they're falling apart. Oh yeah, that's a big issue that happens too, is that like old things, and that's they fall apart. They don't last forever. There's very few things that last forever, save for like the Atari 2600.
And the NES.
Yeah, those things do last. Well, with the NES, though, you still have to get – you have to blow on the cartridges, right?
Or moisten
the contacts or whatever it is?
No. That's just a wives' tale. It's just because – okay, so the problem with that had to do with the manufacturer of the machines in the U.S. when they were sort of that drawer slot loader, because they wouldn't hit the contacts properly. That was the whole problem with it. You just have to reseat it. It on the Japanese ones, that hardly ever happened from what I understand.
Well, yeah, and so, if you're lucky enough to have a top loader NES, then you didn't have that problem. That's
guess
why.
Guess who's got a top loader?
Lucky you. Ooh, she's different.
but you got to blow it before you Nintendo it, so, you know.
Wow. And oh, a zero from the French judge. Wow, Loki. Wow, that bombed. All right. but well, now that all the trademarks and patents and things are expiring on hardware, it's very easy to get like a third party NES. And I know some people get a little with those things because they're not the real thing, but they'll still play all your cartridges. And if you don't want to, you know, if you don't want to do the emulation and the high fancy things, most of them will do like a straight, you know, port through. It's just it's never going to look the same because your TVs are high definition now, as opposed to be using that I don't even remember what it's called, coaxial cable in the back like you used to use back in the day. Unless, of course, and I bet Jamie's got one of these too. You've got a coaxial television that still works that you hook up all your old devices to.
Yeah, we've got a Wega in the room that I'm in.
Yeah, and but I mean, like the Rock Band hardware, those coaxial televisions and things are going to give out eventually. Like, you're kind of lucky that you still have a Wega that works, you know? Not everybody's are going to work forever.
Well, and Wega are last gen, you know, for the CRT era of TVs. So I'm feeling a little bit more confident about that. But there are places that will still do CRT repair. They're just very specialty. You know, like getting tires for my husband's Mustang. They don't make those tires anymore except special order.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's true. There's always if there's always going to be a retro audience, or and it's not just for gaming, but there's going to be people that want to hook up their Laserdisc players or, you know, old media systems and things like that to their televisions. And, you know, you're only going to be able to do that if, you know, you have a coaxial television.
Rob,
so there's always going to be an audience
Rob,
for that.
Rob, what? I have a word for you.
What?
S-Video.
Is that... You have to. Is that the red, yellow, white? No, those are RCA plugs. What's S-Video?
I would say that S-Video was like the big one that preceded maybe HDMI.
Oh,
it's the one with the circle.
I think I had that for a hot minute. The PlayStation 1 supported that, right?
Yeah, S-Video was like the thing for a hot minute. And then, you know, but I like to think of that as what led up to HDMI.
I kind of agree with Bobby. Component was before HDMI because the component was like the five plus.
Having the all in one.
Yeah, but still, I remember component because my first high definition television. Because remember, I bought an HDTV kind of early. It was in what? Who did we do? Was it when Channel 3 interviewed us? We were playing on the Xbox, and that was on my old ass HDTV that actually had like the giant back on it. You could only hook up through component. You couldn't use HDMI on that thing. And component yeah. was where you had like a red, a blue, a green, and another red and a white for the audio. It was like five yeah. plugs. Yeah.
Well, we still got stuff that hooks up that way. I mean, yeah. it's thankfully, I mean, and the thing to deal with like conversion boxes mm-hmm. is that you're going to deal with input lag.
Yeah. And that can be brutal if you're trying to play a music game.
That can be brutal if you're trying to play a shooter game.
Absolutely. A lot of games, really.
So. Guardian Legend, impossible.
Oh, that makes me sad. All right.
Well, the trick to combat that is you just have to be not good enough at music games in order for the input lag to not matter.
Oh, this is just normal for me.
Exactly. Like, I couldn't tell you if there's input lag or if on I'm the just LCD a baddie. TV on my DDR cabinet because I'm just not good enough to be able to detect it.
To be fair, most music games have a sort of like a calibration mode. Like most anything modern really has a calibration mode, so you can kind of account for a lot of that stuff. But like Jamie said, like a shooter's not going to have a calibration mode. You know, music games kind of had to put those in there, but a lot of the other older games didn't really do that. Speaking of music games, quickly, before we get to our kickoff topic, I know we're talking a lot here at the top of the show, but at least it's somewhat gaming related. Loki, you were mentioning in chat that there's a big music game that's being given away for free right now, kind of, free in quotes, right?
Yes, so if you are a Twitch Prime subscriber, then you can actually get a video game musical, I believe, or old school musical, I'm sorry, yeah, OSM. So Old School Musical is free right now with your Twitch Prime subscription. So go mark it for your account or whatever because it's a great music game. I finished that one and it was pretty good.
Yeah, Bobby did a lot of streams of that, I know. So he really liked that too. And I think I played it once or twice. So and it was fun. It's a good game. So, hey, and you can't be free. And I'm using my quotey fingers. I know many of you guys are Amazon Prime and therefore Twitch Prime subscribers. And you can go grab that. And, you know, if you haven't used your free Twitch sub, you might also consider spending it here at VOG Network and giving us the subscription here at Twitch TV. That will allow you access to the video archives where you can go back and watch all of the old episodes of Orange Sonic Radio back to when we were first doing video streaming. Same thing with Bobby Blackwolf and all the specials that we do here at the Voice of Geeks Network. But hey, even if you're just downloading the audio podcast that's free, as it always has been for almost 18 years now, a big thank you to supporting the show. We appreciate it.
Did you see what the other free games on there are? Because I'm looking at the list right now.
I didn't, actually.
There's one called Earthlock, one called Yono and the Celestial Elephants, which just looks adorable.
I think I've heard of that one, yeah.
Kathy Rain, A Detective Is Born. Turok and OSM, like we said. Etherborn and Light Matter.
So there's a lot of games right now. That's interesting because I feel like Twitch Prime kind of took a break from free games for a while and they were doing like Fortnite kits and Apex Legends kits and it was like add-ons for a lot of other games. So it's interesting that they kind of went back. I mean, I don't know if that's just because of the world situation or if that was a long-time strategy of theirs anyway to go back to some of the game giveaways, but that's pretty cool. It's hard to beat the price of free, right? Speaking of free games, one other game I guess we should mention here, because it came up quite a bit in our Discord, and I ended up tweeting about it, and it's not on our show roll tonight, so I should mention as well, if you haven't grabbed it yet, Pac-Man Championship Edition 2 is free right now on PlayStation, Xbox, and Steam. I incorrectly tweeted that it was also on Switch for free, although the game does exist on Switch as a Plus version. Because it is the Plus version with the two-player mode, it is a separate game and therefore not part of this giveaway. But again, it's hard to beat the price of free. I know some people have problems with Championship Edition 2 because the whole Ghosts on Rails mechanic is kind of weird. I don't know. I enjoy it. Like, if you start to, like, kind of memorize certain patterns and things, it can be a lot of fun. And it's one of those games where, like, you make the tiniest little screw-up and it's just going to throw your score in the garbage. And so for that, the challenge is kind of fun. And the music, like if nothing else, download it just so you can play the soundtrack in the background because the music is outstanding. So again, that's Pac-Man Championship Edition 2 on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Steam. So lots of places to grab that. All right. Hey, that's a great kickoff topic is to talk about free games. But let's get into talking about, this is a free game as well that many of people are playing. And this game is such a huge cultural phenomenon that they're getting into other things as well, such as concerts. And I, of course, am talking about Fortnite, which admittedly, I don't think we, the hosts of OLR, play a lot of Fortnite. Loki, do you play any Fortnite? I feel like if anybody's playing it, it's you, and it's probably your kids, not you.
I haven't. I don't have time to play it, but my kids do it quite a bit, but I don't.
Okay, yeah. I have to admit, I don't play a lot of Fortnite. I've tried a couple times. I at least can say I have played it, but the building mechanic throws me off, and I don't know how else to explain it. But I do like when they do weird stuff in Fortnite, and I'm using that in a complimentary way. Like when they were debuting the new Weezer album in Fortnite, like I thought, this is so crazy nuts. I have to see this. Like, this is something Bjork would do or something. So I had to go check that out. And now this is not, I forgot about this, so I didn't go check it out, but I heard a lot about it, and I'm sure many of you checked this out. There was a Fortnite in-game event that happened this past week featuring Travis Scott in concert premiering a brand new track, and this set an all-time record for viewers. Players 12.3 million players tuned in to view the astronomical event in Fortnite by Travis Scott. And I'm sure there's archives everywhere on YouTube and Twitch streams and things like that if you want to go relive it. And I think Epic Games has on their side as well. And, you know, it's interesting in these here times that we live in right now where we can't get together in person to go to a concert. It's interesting that we are exploring this idea of a virtual concert. This kind of led me to thinking about, like, how video games are kind of helping to fill the void in a lot of places right now in this pandemic society that we're living in. I don't know what else to call it. That's really what it is, a pandemic society. And, you know, I think many of us are hoping this pandemic society isn't forever, but we know this pandemic society is probably going to go on in some shape or form for quite some time to come, at least until there is a vaccine or cure for COVID, or they find a way to effectively treat COVID where people are not dying from it in such staggering numbers. And so until those things happen, I think there will be some parts of a pandemic society still going on. And we've already had some stories about how video games are doing this on previous episodes of the show. For example, Final Fantasy XIV last week, we talked about the memorial for a Final Fantasy XIV player who had passed because of COVID. And because you can't get together in mass for funerals right now, a virtual memorial is a way to do it. Animal Crossing. There's many things going on in Animal Crossing, like weddings, maybe not a real wedding, but maybe because somebody's wedding was supposed to take place on such and such day, they did a virtual ceremony in Animal Crossing. We saw something along those lines within the past week. We've had several stories in the past couple weeks about esports and how not just like, it's weird to say traditional esports, but, you know, the things we know as esports, like Overwatch, are filling the void of the lack of physical sports on our televisions right now. But then we also have the physical sport players trying their hands with esports, right? And so we've seen these, like, NBA 2K20 playoffs with NBA players for charity and things like that. So, like, video games are filling the void in that space as well. So it's kind of fascinating to me. For as much as I've grown up in my life and gamers have always been somewhat of an underdog, at least, you know, when I was in high school and so forth, gamers, it was a niche thing. It was a thing you had to be a nerd kind of to be into it. But now here we are in the society that we're in the year 2020, and it's like video games are helping to bring us together. And I'm kind of curious, and I'll open this to our chat room as well as my co-hosts. What are some other ways that you're seeing video games specifically bringing people together in this current world? And how do you think video games might continue to do that? Are we going to see more virtual concerts in light of the real thing in things like Fortnite or perhaps another game? What do you think video games are going to do for this society that we're in as the months unfold? Do any of my co-hosts want to try to tackle that question? I know it's a long question, but there's a lot to talk about.
I haven't seen, I would say, like a super bunch for video games other than the stuff that you can already do online. You know, mostly what I see is the Animal Crossing stuff. I see, you know, I guess things more on that line, things that the users have done together. But what in the bigger picture, that we are seeing things like concerts and stage plays and things like that happening. So right now, I think that we're looking at it expanding into the complete digital realm and just even into traditional arts going that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I still stand very much by the notion, that video games are art. And, you know, you're going to see that the one silver lining in this whole pandemic world is that you're going to see some really beautiful art, the flowers that kind of grow from the fertilizer that's happening right now. And I think there's going to be some great games that come out of it. But that doesn't just mean games. There's going to be great songs that come from it. There's going to be great movies and television and plays and so forth. And you're right. These other artistic industries are also challenged with how do we adapt. And you've seen like Broadway, my heavens, the live stage world, hugely impacted by what's going on. But you're seeing, you know, YouTube, right? Like Andrew Lloyd Webber is putting his shows on YouTube once a week or something like that, which reminds me, I forgot to watch the Love Never Dies one because I was like, how bad can a sequel to Phantom of the Opera be? And I was going to try to see if it could be that bad, but I forgot to watch because that was on Friday, right? So, oh well. But anyway, you know, you see that getting put out there, and you see movies have been really kind of challenged without the traditional movie theater, but you're seeing a lot of, you know, kind of direct to the home type of things like we've seen with the Trolls movie, right? Onward. It seems like a lot of family movies are kind of going that route because I know there's a lot of bored kids at home right now, right? That need to be entertained. So there's a lot of things going that direction. Whereas I think the more adult films are pushing back, like the Top Gun movie, we'll say, are pushing back until the fall because there's hopes that maybe the theaters will still come back in some type of capacity by then, which I would really hope so, even if maybe there's, you know, more social distancing and things that are involved at that. Loki, what's your take on this question? Like, how do you think video games are going to continue to help us in this modern society that we're in now?
I'm pretty sure that they're going to keep doing this type of stuff because it's good promotion for not only Fortnite, but for whatever they're trying to promote at the same time. I mean, they've already done concerts before in Fortnite as well. I want to say, didn't they do like a Marshmello concert or something like that?
Yeah, they did.
And then, of course, they've done cross promotions with all sorts of things, you know, from Avengers to Star Wars to John Wick. I mean, so I'm sure there's some sort of mutually beneficial relationship that they have with these advertising partners to do that in the first place. As far as, like, I mean, granted, we're going to see a lot of people turning to games like this because it's a good way to be able to socialize with folks, to play stuff. Like, my kids were talking to their cousins over Zoom today, and then I think they were playing Roblox together. So, you know, it's kind of a way to be able to socialize without going outside. So It makes sense that a free-to-play game like this would be pretty popular.
Yeah, I keep forgetting how popular Roblox is with a younger audience. It's a huge game for tweens, really.
Those darn kids.
Lots of great answers in chat. Let me get to it over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. SG100 Matt says, I think we're going to see a renaissance in entertainment like how we saw after 9/11. Not in the same way, necessarily. I think there's going to be a large need for comfort games after this whole thing. I just hope that the money is there to fund these new projects. Things have a funny way of working out sometimes. I think it'll be all right. Mr. Rizos in chat says, I work on a manufacturing company, and not video game specific, but with all the production lines off, we're exploring ways to introduce VR and AR to light them up again. Interesting, we're not hearing more about that, the VR and AR being used. Maybe that has to do with the fact that, you know, not everybody has or wants a VR headset. So maybe, you know, I mean, Fortnite, it's very easy to get that on every computer and every phone and so forth. Might be a little harder for the VR AR stuff, but certainly for if it's a tech oriented thing, then there's going to be more of a tech focused audience that has adopted that stuff. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I wonder if some technologies such as like HoloLens, a huge AR technology, you might see some of those things, like a rush to adopt some of those things because of continued social distancing and what have you. I don't know, just theorizing. I don't know what the future holds. If I did, I'd have a lot more questions I'd want to answer. Let's see. Fifth Dream Today in chat says, a lot of people in my local goth community, since we can't go clubbing or to shows, have been in Animal Crossing lately, LOL. And there are huge goth Animal Crossing communities on Facebook with so much traffic right now. I don't know why I love that image, because Animal Crossing is such a cutesy little game. And, you know, the stereotypical goth, you know, is like very like, oh, it's so, everything is so black and tragic.
The glowing skull wall wallpaper and the skull fort and the skull radio and the fortune telling set and the magic rug and all.
And the pen and paper that they give you so you can draw all your own things. I've seen the pentagrams on the ground where people are coaxing villagers into sacrifice.
This is in-game stuff. Like this like total like strappy leather outfit. There's I think that there is stuff for all kinds of kink and as well in the game. We have some special designs going on that were in game. Vinyl masks.
There needs to be more owls in the game besides just Blathers and Celeste, because what other creatures are going to be out at night when all the goths are out?
Apparently Agnes.
I know, I was going to say, actually,
Agnes never sleeps.
Okay, so I have this lady gorilla named Rocket, and she always
wears Rocket.
You do not speak bad of my Rocket.
You know
I love
I hate
Rocket.
More than Rocket?
Ed.
Yeah, and you know who I hate almost as much as Ed, and I'm glad she's not in the game?
Who?
Rilla, the Hello Kitty pink gorilla annoying thing.
No, I love Rocket, and you do not speak bad about Rocket. Rocket is a female gorilla who wears, like, she wears bright pink lipstick and always wears pink clothing. And I love her. She's great. And the thing about her, she's never up before 10 a.m. And if I, for whatever reason, am playing the game at, like, 3 in the morning, she's still out there doing something. So Rocket is my town goth, for sure.
Out there murdering.
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sorry. I love the fact that Animal Crossing, of all things, has gone to the goth community, which I've been to. The worst thing about doing Orange Lounge Radio when this show started, the worst thing was that I had to stop going to the goth dance night that they used to have here locally, because I used to have a lot of fun going and people watching at those events and smoking cloves out front.
I used to go on Thursdays and then like in my work week.
Oh, yeah. Remember
when I would go with Jessica?
Yeah, no. The work week ones ended. The best one was when they were doing it. Sorry, we're reminiscing about local stuff, but I don't care because this is good times. The best one was the one they did at Club 21, and it was on like a Friday or Saturday. It was
when they did.
Do you remember that? I don't remember the name of it.
I thought that wasn't that at the Rage?
There was the Rage. That was the Sunday one that I was just referring to. And I don't remember what they called that anymore. But there was one.
Asylum.
The Asylum. Thank you, Loki. The Asylum.
Asylum.
Was the one they did at the Rage. Hashtag things people from Sacramento will understand. So there was the Asylum. But what was the one? Like Club 21 did like a Synthesis. Was that what it was called? Synthesis or something on like a Friday or Saturday?
Something. Yeah.
Wasn't that the one
that was at Country Club Lanes?
Yes, I think it moved back and forth. Yes.
Yeah, I've been to that one a few times. And I also went to the one that was at, oh gosh, it was a lesbian bar usually. And
yeah,
Thursday
that was
night
it.
They turned it.
That was
it. Yeah,
Club
okay,
21.
So that was it. Okay, yeah, that was on Thursdays.
I thought they did it on the weekend.
Maybe they moved it, but they were doing it on a Thursday. And that's when I had that rash from taking amoxicillin that made my skin raise up looking like a spider web. So when I went, the place that was stretched out on my skin glowed under the black light. Because, yes,
cool.
I am that pale. And everyone's like, wow, that's great. You look so cool. Is that makeup? I'm like, no, it's amoxicillin. And then I'd go in the bathroom and rub like steroid cream all over my arm so I wouldn't scratch myself to death.
Okay, so trying to get somewhat back on topic, how can video games help us relive the goth dance days of our past? I don't know.
There's all kinds of ways you can goth anything up. I mean, I've seen people build entire, like, gothly neighborhoods in The Sims. And, you know, we've got everything going on in Animal Crossing. I mean, look at the old dream towns in Animal Crossing. Remember Ica Village?
I do.
Yeah. Ica Village was the shit. But I mean, of course you've got like your general horror games, which I mean, not necessarily gothy, but some of the elements can go in. You can, see at the very says you can wear a Frankenfurter hoodie in New Horizons.
No, SSJ 100 Matt says save your bells for Halloween. Look, when you're goth, Halloween is every day. That's what it is. When you're goth, you get to celebrate Halloween every day. You kind of get to do that when you're...
Halloween is life.
You get to do that as well when you're gay, and that's why there's so much crossover, just so you know.
And to tell Dark Tetsuya, KK does have KK Dirge. Just saying.
Yes, yes. KK Dirge. I have KK Dirge. It was like the second song I got.
I don't have it yet, but...
Oh, I can order it for you.
Thank you. I do also have my DJ KK, so I get my Eurobeat on in my basement.
All right. It sounds like we need to transition into our gaming weeks, but I thought we could talk a little bit about how gamings might help the future, or we could just take a look back in the past, which is what we did a little bit there at the end, but that's okay.
Rob,
what?
There is no future. There is only now.
Only Zool. All right. Anyhow, let's go back to our gaming weeks and talk a little bit about the types of games that we have been playing this week. Dark Sakura, how was Animal Crossing?
10 hours of Animal Crossing a day, pretty much. I mean, and it's more like I'll leave the game on and go walk out, you know, and then I will go water my vegetables because I have an apocalypse garden. Three of my carrots are surviving. It's really awesome. Yes, from death comes life. But anyway, I'm also I started to play Pokemon because I decided that I was going to see how my lungs were doing and try to take a walk, my normal little just quick neighborhood jaunt, like, you know, maybe half a mile. I made it a fifth of a mile and came inside and heaved. So no Pokemon happened. And that was really it. We still have, I mean, we haven't started Final Fantasy VII yet. It's just been Animal Crossing. Like, I'll even tell Dan, hey, why don't we start Final Fantasy? He's like, let me do this Animal Crossing first. And then before you know it, he built a Teacup Park in Animal Crossing. Did you see Teacup Park?
No. Have you collected all the teacup rides?
We only have one.
Oh, I'm so, I have three of the four. You have
to,
I'm missing
other
one.
Other people have to order them for you.
Yeah. I traded a lighthouse because one of my friends got the yellow lighthouse by default, and she was like,
I got that one too.
Well, if you want just a plain white lighthouse, I'm open to giving you one.
Marissa gave me a red and white one.
Okay, cool. I traded for that, and then somebody just gave me a black, the black checkerboard one. So the only teacup ride I need to have all four is like the pastel-y one. There's like a very pastel looking one.
I have the red and blue one. The mostly red, bold, cold. Actually, I don't know which one I have. Maybe I have the pastel. I'll have to let you look at it. But yeah, Dan, well, we have, okay, so here's the story. And this is going to lead up to a joke now that we have in our village. So, I moved my orange grove to the south west section under where Dan's little plateau is, where he built his house and his, you know, redneck kiddie pool and everything. And so Dan's like, I'm going to build a Disneyland. I'm like, with what? We only have teacups. Like, we'll do it with teacups. So he uproots all of the orange trees and moves them around and builds Teacup Park. And that's where I made that little QR sign that I linked you so that we can have a sign for Teacup Park. So, and Marissa gave me purple lights and I have green lights and we're doing all this crap to it. And it looks great and everything. And of course, Dan has it roped off because, you know, Disneyland is closed down. Earlier today, he was like, yeah, we have all these sections
in here. So you built Teacup Park for nobody to visit.
Well, you can look at it. It's not on.
That sounds like that South Park episode where Cartman buys the amusement park so no one else can go to it but him.
Yeah, well, that's Teacup Park. So anyway, Dan's like talking about all the places that we have in our island. Because I built a Japanese cemetery. See, goth. I moved all of my non-native fruit to, you know, a little 4x4 orchard. I made like a little botanical garden with all of the flowers I have any idea what the fuck to do with. You know, I've got like the flower garden, you know, the breeding area for my flowers. We have the town center. Dan has his house in Redneck Land. And then he says, and then we have Anaheim. Because he uprooted the orange trees to build a theme park.
Yes, perfect, perfect.
So now it's just called Anaheim, apparently.
You'll have to rename your town.
I'm not renaming my town.
I know.
Can't rename it.
All right. Anything else?
And I wouldn't rename it Anaheim anyway, because, I mean, jeez.
All right, anything else for your gaming week?
No, but now you all know the story of Anaheim and Animal Crossing.
Of Teacup Park, which you're not allowed to visit.
Teacup Park, which you can look at. You can go in the park. You can sit on the things. You can buy, you know, popcorn. And because we couldn't get, of course, there's not a churro machine. And the teacups are all sealed off, so no turning on the teacups. It's just there. We even have, like, the little rope going across it. It looks really good. It's pretty.
I've been doing a similar-ish thing. Like, I have two gardens, basically, in my village right now. I think I've changed. I don't remember the last time you came to Smushland, but I've changed a little bit. So, like, on one raised cliff, I didn't terraform a lot. I was more like, I'm going to work with what I've got. So on one raised cliff, I built like a Zen garden. So I have things like the stone archway, the Japanese headstone, the fountains, the very beautiful like fountains, the deer scare, things like that. And I have a lot of like my 5x5, you know, the guides online that show you how to, which I know is apparently now not the best way to do the breeding of the flowers, but I've invested enough
in it. You know what the real secret is?
Find the rare flower island.
No, getting other people to water your flowers.
Yes, that is a big one.
And by the way, I did make my whole bamboo forest Zen garden thing myself.
The only thing that ticks me off is that every time I go and I make sure I've watered every plant and I've like destroyed one or two watering cans doing it, it inevitably rains an hour later. I always want to scream. Anyway, I did that in one area, and then I have another area that's my more modern park that's a little more inspired by like a Central Park or something, and that's where I put my teacups, and I have like the jungle gym thing is there, and I put the big monster Godzilla there because it looks, and I put like the metro clock, so it looks a little more like a modernish kind of theme park in that area. So I have like my relaxing park and my loud park. If that makes sense.
It does.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing with Smushland. Anyway.
I'm just trying to lure Wisp into my cemetery so I can get a screenshot with him there.
Oh, look at you, goth. All right. Anyway.
Girl.
Loki, before I go on an Animal Crossing tangent, Loki, how was your gaming week?
My week was all right. I played mostly Earth Defense Force Iron Rain, so I'm like up through mission 36 on that, I think. And that's been pretty fun. It's a very pretty game, except the AI for your teammates is absolutely garbage. Like, I don't know how it's possible that it's actually worse than any other game that I've seen in that series or ever. Or even like if I were to make up AI for like something, like having never built AI whatsoever, I still think it would have been better than that. Because they literally, there'll be these giant bugs coming, and instead of shooting them, they are literally turned around 180 degrees, shooting the ground. Or, like, that you keep hearing them, there's these towers in the game that you're not supposed to attack. Because if you attack them, then they send out a burst of energy that attacks things around it. And they keep saying, well, stop shooting the tower. And meanwhile, they're just shooting the tower, just constantly shooting the tower. It's just... It's funny just because how useless they are, but like to the point where it's just like you release this game and you thought this was okay because it's not. Thankfully, though, the excuse in the game is that you're like the super soldier, and so you're like a one-man army anyways, and so, I mean, they're just there to be decorations, basically. You do all the work. So I've been enjoying that a lot, but it is just really weird, though. Otherwise, the game is pretty awesome and looks great. And then, of course, I've been playing Orna. They just put out a really big patch on that, so it looks quite a bit different now. I got a new ornate drop, so I have a really high-quality weapon now that I'm leveling up that's going to do 200 points of attack more than my current weapon once I level it all the way up. And, I've just been mainly playing those two games. A little bit of Stepmania as well, so I've been playing that, and that's about it.
Yeah, I was kind of taken by surprise what a big update Orna got this week. Like, it's now that map, you can turn the map any which way, which is kind of cool, like Pokemon.
Yeah, you used to be able to do that if you opted in for the beta features. So they've had that for a while now.
I didn't like the beta map because I couldn't see as much. I didn't learn about the rotating thing till later, so whatever. It's cool now.
Yeah,
so... but I just the capturing a region interface, I don't like. I think they tried to make it more complicated so that people couldn't do the drive-by captures as easy, which I understand. You don't want people to play when they're driving, but I've definitely played when Alan is driving. And so I'm a little sad that that isn't as easy.
Yeah, it was kind of fun when people do that, but whatever.
Whatever. All right. Jamie, do you still have Orna installed? You should fire it up sometime because your player is still showing on my house.
I do. Hold on. I'll just open it right now. I haven't looked at it in an age.
You'll probably gain like 100 levels from all the XP we've been giving you.
Oh, thank you guys for doing all the work for me.
Yeah, right. All right. Anyway, so let's see. My gaming week then. What else have I been playing? I've been playing a bit of Animal Crossing as well. You know, trying to play the turnip market and all that and doing some of the things with my island that I talked about already. I won't repeat that too much. I also played and beat, thank you very much, the Final Fantasy VII Remake. So it's not often that I play a game start to finish. So I think this is a notable occasion that I actually finished the Final Fantasy VII Remake. There is so much I want to talk about, but I'm not going to be the one that spoils it. Don't worry. So I'm not going to get into that here. I want to do a spoiler cast with some other friends who have beaten the game or already know the ending or what have you so that we can talk about it because... It's something that's I can't say that's what it is, but
I want to play. That's a game I do need to go and play. Like I've been seeing like video clips online of like some of the mini games and stuff in it, but I really do need to finish that.
Yeah, they have a cool darts mini game pretty early on. They have the squats and the pull ups, like you know a lot of things that are kind of inspired by the original, of course, Final Fantasy VII. Of course, it is. Again, my thoughts and things on the game haven't changed a lot since last week, so I'm not going to go off for an hour about Final Fantasy VII again. I'm just going to say I'm satisfied completely with the remake. I believe that I understand the ending. I believe I completely see what they're trying to do with it, and I am such a fan. Like, it was one of those, like, what? What? And so that anyway, yeah, that's all I can say. But I was just, yeah, I'm so happy with what they did with it. I don't think everybody's going to be, but I was just like, it's incredible. So yeah, looking forward to seeing what comes next. So we'll see if they announce something at E3. I'm using my quotey fingers, or what they're going to do, if we're going to have to wait another year. I don't know what happens now, but I enjoyed my 32 hours with the game that it took me from start to finish, doing pretty much all the side quests that I could access, because you intentionally can't access every single side quest until you go back through the game later on. There's a particular chapter where you end up going this way or that way, and you can go the other way when you go back through later on. So, that's all I'm going to say on the Final Fantasy VII Remake, or else I'll spoil it. Other things I want to talk about. I've been playing, of course, continuing on Final Fantasy XIV, because I always play that game. Trying to do more of the crafting and gathering. That's a section of the game I've been ignoring for a little while. But thanks to... I was reminded the Diadem got a re... kind of like was redone for gathering in this latest patch, so I was checking that out. And so that's gathering's a nice little relaxing thing to do. Like I can do that on one monitor and like watch somebody on Twitch on the other monitor, so that's cool. And then I've been playing a lot of random stuff on Xbox thanks to Xbox Game Pass. A couple games I've played before, actually, that I just wanted to re-experience on Xbox, like Dead Cells. I'd played that a little bit on Switch, and so I ended up playing it on Game Pass on Xbox a little bit because it's on Game Pass. Wizard of Lore? Shoot, I forget the name of the game, but I'd also played that on Switch a little bit, and it's like a... It's a roguelike, I guess, slash Diablo type of game. Wizard of Legend, that's the name. I didn't even have to look it up. Wizard of Legend, it just took a minute for the name to come to me. I was playing a little bit of that as well. So just been enjoying, those games. So I'm hoping they're going to add even more to Game Pass in the coming weeks. I need to go back and finish Nier. That's on my list of things to do because that totally got derailed by my Final Fantasy VII play. But now I'm also in the mindset where I'm like, I really want to play 12 again. I want to play 13 again because we had that talk last week about how Final Fantasy VII Remake has a lot in common with Final Fantasy XIII. Just kind of want to go back and experience that again, but we'll see whenever they get all that on Game Pass. But otherwise, that is about it for my gaming week. I also play a little bit of the game we're going to talk about here at the top of the show in the next news article, so I'll save my thoughts till we get to that. Otherwise, I guess we should get into some news. I don't have a lot of housekeeping right now. We're still going to continue to do this show distance-wise. How long? I don't know. You know, I realize some states are starting to reopen a little bit, but California is not one of them. And I'm pretty sure I can speak safely for everyone when I say we're going to listen to our governor because our governor's listening to science. And so when he says it's okay, I'll trust that. Other ones, I'm not so sure I trust as much, but you do what works best for y'all. But as far as OLR being in the same room, we'll do it when our science listening to governor says it's okay. All right.
I don't think they're doing what's best for them at all anyway, but.
What do you mean? People. Here in this state,
no,
or other places?
No, not here in California, but just having talked to my mother.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No,
oh, for sure.
Not doing what's best for them.
Yeah. So. All right. Anyhow. Let's move on and talk about some gaming news. Let's get into our first story tonight. Loki.
So this was a big update this week. So Super Mario Maker 2 was given its last update called World Maker. And World Maker added a bunch of things to the game, but namely the biggest being the ability to create your own Super Mario worlds. So you actually get to create the overworld, much like you would see in Super Mario World. You could add up to, I believe, eight levels and a total of 40 stages in there and all sorts of fun stuff, even like the toad houses, pipes, you name it. Aside from that, though, they did add a few more things, including, I believe, the rest of the Koopa Kids. They added a Super Mario Brothers 2 mushroom in there, different head blocks, and a bunch of other stuff. I think the Mecha Koopas. I don't remember what they're called, but yeah. Lots of stuff. So definitely worth checking out. It's a free update. It looks pretty cool. I'm really curious to see what people are going to make with this.
So I actually jumped in there and played a little bit of Mario Maker 2. That was the game I was referencing earlier. I played a little bit of it because I heard about this update. And I ended up playing some Rando's World. So you can go into the course bot or whatever it's called. And there's a section where you can just kind of explore different worlds. You just go in and it shows you random people's worlds. And I just picked some person at random. And, you know, you have like a little world map. And it's basically like they've strung their courses together to make, you know, like a map and a full game, if you will. So I think that's pretty rad. I think it's a nice little bookend on things.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I have not yet played a level that had the Mario 2 stuff. I thought that was a pretty bold thing for them to put in as well, which is not a full Mario 2 maker. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. But there's the whole mushroom that lets Mario pick up monsters like he was Mario 2 Mario. And
I'm curious because, like, you know how you can play four player multiplayer in that, and each person's like Toad or Luigi and stuff like that. I wonder if they have the physics of those characters in with that mushroom.
I would doubt it because it would break the balance of those levels. But I don't know. I haven't tested it myself. But I'm assuming no. But yeah, I want to go get in there and play with some of the Mario 2 mechanics. I like it every time that Mario Maker adds a new mechanic because people think of ways to use that mechanic in all these different ways, right? Like the key and door thing. They do all these weird things with that, you know?
Oh yeah, that's right. Then they also had that whole thing with the key and the, I forget what it was from Mario 2, the mask that attacks you when you take the key.
Oh, the Phantos. Yeah.
Yeah, Phantos. So that's pretty cool. I am a little disappointed with all the cool stuff that they've added to it, and I understand that they can't support the game forever, that this is the last update, because it's like, oh, man, look at all this cool stuff. You know, it's like, I was hoping it'd be more like Mario 2 stuff, or, like, even it'd be cool, like, if you get, like, Samus's powers and stuff, you know, do some cool things with that, like they did with Link.
Well, you can't say they haven't provided a lot of content
They've done a lot, but it makes me want more. That's all.
Of course. The gamer is never satisfied. We want more. But maybe they'll plan on doing a Mario Maker 3, or maybe they'll expand the Mario Maker concept into one of their other franchises. I mean, after all, Link's Awakening kind of had that dungeon build. I mean, it was kind of, it wasn't like, it, yes, it was a dungeon builder, but it wasn't. It was a thought, but it wasn't.
I think it was better realized in Mario Maker 2 than it was in that game.
For sure. Dark Tetsuya says yes, or NES Remix 3. Orange Wright says it was the last free update, but then says, nah, that was probably it. But that is true. They said the last free update. Bobby Blackwolf says Super Mario crossover. Come on, Nintendo, do it. Yeah, that would be awesome. And I would all be about an NES Remix 3 or some type of, like, user remix. You remix.
Oh, my God. Can Switch you imagine, let's fanboy for a second, can you imagine if NES Remix was the new Mario Maker game?
Oh, I would. Oh. It's so good. Yeah, I would love that. I would love that. That's a franchise I just want to see come back as NES Remix. Or Super Nintendo Remix, or whatever they want to do. I would love that, but we'll see. We're kind of at Nintendo's mercy, I suppose, in that department. All right. Well, moving on to another game that got a big update this week. It's one we've already talked about earlier in the show, but Animal Crossing. We didn't really talk about the update. We didn't really focus on that. Animal Crossing got a pretty big update this week, right? We saw that there was a museum upgrade that happened, that Red came in, and now I've already bought one piece of fake artwork from him, that little bastard.
And nerfing.
Yeah, there was a lot of nerfing. The bugs got nerfed. The spawn of, like, tarantulas and stuff got nerfed, right? The bank interest took a nerf. But here, have a free mat to make up for it. So they did. Leaf showed up, which is cool, because they added the bushes, right? And so that's, like, a totally, like, new thing for at least New Horizons to have the bushes in there. And there's different types.
It was a new leaf.
Yeah, it wasn't the last game, but it wasn't in New Horizons yet, but now it is. And everybody had the azalea bushes, but then the second bush was kind of like, I had tea olive ones, and then, like, I know my friend had holly bushes, and so, like, there's different bushes that you
leave. I'm missing the holly.
Oh.
So I need holly if anyone has any.
They're gone. How do you the bushes don't reproduce.
You buy, like, them up.
Yeah.
I bought up, like, bulk of everywhere that I was.
See, you can come dig up a holly bush, but I want to keep my others that I have. So hopefully Leaf comes back. He should, though. He shows up several times, right? But he's just not there every day. Right? All right. Anyway.
Yeah, he comes at random.
What is notable about this update is that an earlier data mining that happened a couple days before actually spoiled, shall we say, some of what happened in this update. And the interesting thing is there were things in this data mine that wasn't in the update that could indicate that there are other updates coming. One of them would include a museum cafe. That could somehow incorporate the gyroids, because that isn't really in the game. The only time you ever see a gyroid is when you're building a bridge or a ramp or something.
But yeah, I was going to ask if those are back in the game.
Not yet, but now we've seen Nintendo fully plans to patch this game, too, to add new stuff. So it'll be, and that's kind of interesting, too, because, you know, I think we're getting right around the time where a lot of people, especially if you're playing the stock market, are paying off their loans. So there might be less and less incentive for people to check in the game. But if they kind of drip feed some of this extra stuff, like the art wing and the bushes and maybe the cafe and the gyroids in the future, it's going to give people a reason to keep going and keep checking in on the game, which I think is very interesting. Let's see. There's going to be vegetables, apparently, in a later update, they're saying. Tomato, wheat, sugarcane, potato, carrot, and pumpkin. Apparently something with a seafood Critterpedia page that indicates that at some point you may be able to actually sea dive, which I think that would be brand new for Animal Crossing, right? I don't think we've ever had that in an Animal Crossing game where you'd actually sea dive.
We have. Yes,
oh, have we?
Have.
What
it
was
a new
it?
Leaf.
Oh, what did you do? I don't remember it at all. Was it just...
Yeah, you would see, like, a little, like, dark shadow or something, and you would be able to dive for it to get, like certain clams and things. Like, you know, it's been a while since I played New Leaf.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it was in there as of the last game.
Hmm. So that's some interesting things to look forward to, for sure. I think that's especially, like, the vegetable stuff, because I know some people have been missing some of the other. I'm not seeing in the data mine or whatever, I'm not seeing anything about, like, bananas or some of the islands, the durians and some of the, like, the fruit that was more native to islands. I'm not seeing that is coming over yet, but maybe that'll come much later. Who knows? There's still plenty of months that they're probably going to continue to support this. I mean, heck, how long ago was Mario Maker 2 released? That's about a year old at this point, right? So I think we can fully expect that Animal Crossing will probably get regular updates for about a year.
Yeah, it was like last June.
Yeah, last June. It was right before last E3, I think, when they released that. And then I think Splatoon 2 is very similar, where they got regular updates for about a year. So hopefully we'll be seeing that sort of thing in Animal Crossing for quite some time. Dark Tetsuya in chat says, Leaf needs to come back so I can sell off my weeds. Dark Tetsuya says, Rob, the trick is to look up the piece you're buying online to make sure it's the real deal. I do know that, but I don't always know the name of the painting. Okay, I'm not an art history student. I guess I could Google image search or something, but I kind of just have to go, does this look right? Like, I've heard some of them are very obvious. Like, my friend got a David statue in his town that was very fake because, like, what David was holding was something, like, completely different. But like, I think some of them are harder to spot than others if you don't have a rich knowledge of art, which I'm going to fully admit I don't. So I know a lot of useless pop culture shit, but I don't necessarily know my art history. If there was a way I could like know the names of the paintings and Google them, I'm sure there's probably an online reference somewhere. That's just why I need to look up. There's probably just a website out there that's like, here are all the Animal Crossing paintings and how to spot if it's a fake. And that's probably just what I need to use, I suppose. Cheat. That's what I need to do. I need to cheat. Oh, I'm sorry. Use my references.
Well, no. In that case, something like that isn't cheating. I mean, for me, I took how much art history, and I even still need to look a few of them up. I mean, there's a few I could look at and go, bitch, that's wrong. And then others are like, did he wear a hat?
Yeah, exactly.
You need to teach Siri to understand whether or not those named paintings are fake or not. Hey, Siri, is this a fake painting or not?
AMO387 in our chat says there are a couple where literally a hand is in a slightly different position and stuff. Yeah, that's the stuff. That's what worries me is that some of them are going to be like really like slightly different. And that's the stuff I'm definitely not going to be able to spot. Like David holding something completely different in his hand, I might be able to recognize that. But like some of these other paintings, I don't know so much about that. And then Bobby Blackwell says it's an open book test. I like that. Yes, it is an open book test. And AMO387 says there is a list. I shared it in different Facebook groups and Discords I'm in. LOL. I'm sure just like that a flower crossbreeding guide, it's spreading like wildfire.
And don't forget, some of us have the guide on order. Dan got it for me for my birthday.
Oh, yeah. The official guide. Right.
Yeah, it ships, I think, on the 30th.
But would the official guide cover this because it's in a patch? It might not cover the painting thing.
Why not? Because since it's a sponsored strategy guide, I would think they'd have all that stuff ready to go for print.
I wonder if the strategy guide might give away some other stuff coming in the future then. Who knows? All right. Well, there you go. There's your other Animal Crossing update for this episode. But I know tons and tons of people are living their lives in Animal Crossing right now. And I can't say I blame you. All right. Moving on. Dark Sakura.
We had brought up earlier about just how, video games were starting to, go more digital, have more events. We had that concert, we had other things going on. But digital video games hit a record high, 10 billion sales in March, which I'm pretty sure some of us Animal Crossing people were involved in that, and the Doom peoples. It went from 883 million in February to 1.5 billion in March. So basically, PC games actually climbed 56% in sales. And it was, of course, widespread over Europe and North America for the most part. They're looking really for reliable ways of getting the games or they don't have to leave the house. Nintendo sold 5 million copies of Animal Crossing New Horizons in March.
Wow.
And it set a sales record for the most units of a digital console game sold in a single month.
That's pretty impressive.
Mobile games.
Go ahead.
Mobile games rose 15%. So most mobile games for the month of March was $5.7 billion. Pokemon Go saw its revenue jump 18% in March after Niantic changed the leveling rules so you don't have to be out of the house.
I'm actually kind of surprised by that. I would have thought like Niantic was doing that to kind of keep that game hanging on, and yet it's actually having the effect where more people. That's fascinating to me, actually. I'm kind of with Jason in the intro to tonight's show. A lot of this news isn't necessarily surprising because, of course, we're all stuck at home. Of course, we're buying more games digitally. But when you hear things like that, that is surprising to me.
I really wasn't wasn't super surprised by it. I really was not.
Well, the Pokemon Go one, that's wow. Yeah.
No,
I mean,
I'm really not surprised by that either.
Wow.
Because basically, you know, and this is me incorporating the people who are, I don't want to say lazy, but people who are lazy, who don't go walking around, who don't really, who don't think about the game because they're not leaving the house. Or even that, you know, for people who just might have been too busy in everyday life to, you know, remember to open up the app. Now they have time to do this. And of course, you know, if you're right next to your Pokestop, then, you know, yeah, buy some coins, get, you know, get some more of this package stuff here and get some more eggs because I get that free walking stuff every day, you know. I'm not super surprised by it at all. And let's also throw in that we've got some of the freebie services going on. Like right now, Stadia is free for, was it 2 or 3 months? 2 months. So free access to Stadia for 2 months right now. You know, you've got all the freebies offered up on PlayStation Network. I grabbed Pac-Man myself, a few other things. They have actually a pretty decent list of just freebie games that look really fun.
Uncharted and Journey were the other two big ones, yeah. That some
Uncharted yeah. is only for PlayStation Plus, I think.
No, no. It was at
when
one
I
point.
Looked, it said.
It was at one point PlayStation Plus only, but Uncharted and Journey were free for everybody. So.
Okay.
I don't know how long. It may be over. I don't know how long.
I think it's through May 4th.
Okay. Yeah, Chad is confirming. Bob Coffey says Uncharted 1 through 3 collection free for everyone. Uncharted 4 is PSN Plus. There it is. That's the confusion. The newest gotcha. Uncharted is PSN Plus, but you can get the old collection for free.
Gotcha. Okay. But yeah. So anyway, I think, you know, my bit of news was a big duh. But at any rate, you know, there you go. We're seeing that actually now as the viable moneymaker that they thought it was going to be a few years ago.
Well, here, you know, and even though, yes, I think we're all agreeing, you know, Jason said in the intro and I said, and you're saying that it is kind of a duh. I think at the same time, like how much of a increase, you know, is partially surprising. The types of things like, you know, again, Pokemon Go or, you know, just how much Animal Crossing. I think we all expected the digital games were going to take off in this situation. But could anyone have predicted that Animal Crossing would sell that much? That is
yes.
huge. Well, you're biased. So,
no, I'm seriously, though, I'm paying attention to all of the hype that we saw online. I mean, and I keep in mind, I am in a few other groups, right? But I was seeing just a lot of people who were like, hey, I were really looking forward to Animal Crossing, or, you know, people who I never thought would be Animal Crossing fans, like, yeah, I can't wait to come out, you know. So I guess I wasn't surprised because I had seen so many people talking about it. Hmm. You know, it could just be in the circles that I'm in.
Maybe. And online hype doesn't always translate into dollars either, because sometimes and it might be because the reviews come out before the game does and it kind of derails a lot of that hype. You know what I mean? Like No Man's Sky, maybe, is kind of one that comes to mind. Although, again, the where that game is at now is completely different. But anyway, we've talked about that a million times before. I think also the other question I kind of want to bring up with this, and I think that this article that you've gone over raises this question, is there a permanent change now that's going to come because of this? You know, we've been watching this industry kind of slowly trend towards digital, but there's been many of us that have been holding out on it. And I think, and I don't think suddenly overnight everybody is going to let go. And again, just like, and I've said this before on the show, just like the music industry, just like Blu-rays, you know, CDs, records, there's always going to be collectors that want physical media. That thing, that part will never go away. But as far as like our industry as a whole and where, you know, the masses, the common, you know, the common players and the casuals are going, do we think that there is maybe permanent change that's going to happen because of this? Because so many people went digital with Animal Crossing and because so many people are going digital for the Final Fantasy VII Remake and other things that are happening during this time, is that going to have some type of permanent impact once this pandemic... But I mean, once we come out of the other side of the pandemic, what do you think?
I think that there's no choice but to move with this. I really think that there is zero choice but to embrace the new reality. This is our reality now. We have proven, you know, so many companies just in general, and I'm thinking big scope, right? Like, oh, we can't have our people work from home. It's going to be too hard, too expensive, blah, 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 blah. And they're doing just fine. You know, people are like, oh, I need my physical copy and all the blah, 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 blah. They're doing just fine. You know, it's viable. People are enjoying it. And yeah, there's still people who want their physical copies, who wait for it to ship and everything. And that's fine too. But I actually, you know me, I'm a big packaging whore. I love to see the packaging thing comes in. I like to see, you know, what designers can do. That makes me happy. But they're still designing the artwork on the digital copies too.
You like your dishes? Yeah. You have your dish that came with that one Dreamcast game that you have?
Yes. But I'm more talking about like artwork and design elements and all of these things.
Sure.
And it's just like, and you know, for me who had a focus on print media when I was in college, I've gone digital with my work. And I work just as hard as I would have worked doing something for print.
Now,
I don't have to inhale ink fumes.
A very good point from Bobby in our chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, who says, I will continue to buy physical as long as possible because my data cap will return once this is all over. I can't afford the additional bandwidth hit downloading an 85 gig game like Final Fantasy VII Remake after buying the game. Right now, I have no data cap. That data cap is returning in a few months. And you do raise a good point. And, you know, I think that's another reason why more people are willing to go digital right now, because there's that kind of digital free-for-all. But let me ask this question, too. We're all assuming the data cap is coming back. Will it?
See, that leads it back to the other point about companies saying, oh, it was too expensive to let people do this, or this way we'll lose money if we drop the data cap. Yet they're still making their money.
Uh-huh. So I think it's easy to have the knee-jerk reaction of, yes, the data caps will come back. And, I tend to agree. Yes, the data caps will come back. But now, like, you know, piggybacking on what Jamie's saying, they're going to have a lot harder time holding on to the argument on why the data caps exist in the first place. And you have to look at where are some of the permanent changes to society happening. Like,
we also don't have to consider where people live, too.
That is, yeah, of course.
You know, for them having a physical, going back to the physical copy thing, that's going to make more sense for them. They should have limited prints of it.
Nobody's talking about physical going away, but I'm talking about, you know, is digital going to really start to take over the way that the industry has kind of thought it would several years ago?
And even so, as we're also looking into people doing a bit more minimalist living and focusing a bit more on actually what they need to have. And I've seen more people – I have personally talked to people who are like, you know what? I have all of this excess in my house, and now that I'm here 24/7, I didn't realize just how clogged up my home is. And donating things and getting rid of things and downsizing. And I think we're going to see that continue to trend as well, and that's going to go right into all these physical copies of games for people can afford to do that.
I just think, you know, there may be some type of societal changes that happen when it comes to these data caps in the first place. What I mean by that, let me explain myself, is that, like, and I don't like to talk too much about my day job because I like to separate my day life and my night life, but my day job has said that there will probably, like we haven't really done this working at home thing before. We obviously kind of had no choice because of the situation. And now they're saying, you know, this will probably be a part of our culture in some shape or form for the foreseeable future. So meaning that because this whole thing happened, it kind of showed that work at home was possible and everybody's able to kind of succeed in it. And so it's something they're thinking about working into the culture in the future. And I'm sure this company I'm at is not the only one that's thinking about that, right? There's probably lots of companies out there that are like, huh, you know, now that we've tried this work at home thing, we might kind of do this a little more in the future. And so that starts this snowball of now there's going to be more demand for internet and bandwidth and things like that. So it's going to, I think, force some of these internet companies to, you know, it's going to drive up demand for internet companies. And if internet companies are not willing to get rid of the bandwidth on their own, there's going to be more competition that opens up, especially as we start to move into 5G, which did not cause this whole situation, of course. But I've heard that stuff, of course. But we know that that's the technology that things are going in. But, you know, it is certainly a fair point to say, I live in a big city, So that type of stuff is still accessible for me. There's still a lot of rural parts of the nation where the dialogue is going to be very different. And so, sure, for that part, I kind of understand. But I think it is a fair question to say, we're all assuming these data caps are coming back. But are they going to come back? If they come back, is it going to be the same way we've always known it? I think there's going to be a lot of pressure kind of pushed back on the companies to do it a little differently next time. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see. Anything's possible, I suppose. Again, I can't tell the future. If I could, I might have done a lot of things different in the early months of 2020.
I'll put it this way. I don't think we're going to go back to where we were.
I don't think so either.
I think that change, keeping a lot of the aspects of this that we are, I think we're going to have to get used to it. And not going, you know, more into history, but if you study any epidemiology, especially looking back to the 1918 influenza outbreak, the second wave is always worse, and China's already seen the quarantine, the shelter in place is not over. And theirs went for, what, 3 years? And we're looking at something that's probably killing more people in light of the medical advancements that we have. So I think we are looking at this being our new normal.
I think a lot can change in a few months. And I think 5 months ago, we had no idea what any of this was. And so I think it's very, very hard to say what's going to happen 5 months from now. I think the answer is we don't know. Nobody knows.
I think actually history is a very good teacher. We are seeing it actively repeating itself right now.
It can be, but I also don't necessarily want to be doom and gloom about it all. Like, I think the whole...
I'm not being doom and gloom. I'm being realistic. The same thing happened, and it's happening again right now.
All right. I'm going to just move on to the next topic. So let's move on to our next topic. Loki.
All right, I was just going to say, and I've been hearing a lot of good things from this Umbrella Corp, and I think they have the answer to solving this whole COVID-19 problem. In the meantime, though, we should be concerned about our Nintendo accounts. So if you have a My Nintendo account, you might want to go ahead and turn on that two-step verification, because apparently there's been a breach, and about 160,000 accounts have been breached by hackers as well, apparently earlier this month. While payment information was not accessed, so they don't have the ability to see your payment, they can make unauthorized purchases with your account, as I've seen some of the comments in there. But so apparently these network IDs were originally connected to the Wii U and Nintendo 3DS, so it's a bit older. So basically they have decided to disable the login function and reset the passwords of the affected accounts. So if you haven't had that happen yet, good luck for you. But still, good idea to put on that two-factor authentication wherever possible. And that doesn't just necessarily go for your My Nintendo account, but anywhere you can get it.
You know, this whole news, like, well, I'm also kind of not surprised because, you know, these types of breaches are always going to happen. But there were a couple of elements that surprised me about it. Number one was that Nintendo has two-factor authentication in the first place. I didn't even know that because, you know, we always kind of joke that Nintendo lags behind in some of the online stuff. And I swear they haven't always had it. And I don't know when they rolled it out.
Yeah, I don't remember that either, because usually we'd see some sort of story on, like, the blog sites or whatever, yeah, saying, hey, yeah, they have it, because that's what it was with PlayStation Plus and or the PlayStation accounts, and that's when I added it there. But yeah, I don't remember when they would have added this.
Yeah, but I'm glad to know it's there now, because I absolutely went and enabled it, because it's funny, because I was using Nintendo Network as my universal sign-in, because it was what we used on the Wii U, and it just, at the time, the Switch, I don't see anything wrong with it until this whole thing happened. But luckily, so far, knock knock, I wasn't reset, like Nintendo did not reset my account, so I'm assuming I wasn't part of the breach. I haven't had any problems, again, knock on wood, but I went and enabled two-factor authentication right away so that if, you know, something does happen, at least they'll have that hurdle to get over, which will be a pretty big one. I was also surprised that they're using Google Authenticator. I did not learn until I was listening to Bobby tonight that you could just load any Google Authenticator thing into Authy, which is the app I use for like Discord and Twitch and all that other stuff. So I didn't even know you could roll it all into one app. I thought you had to use Google Authenticator, so there's that. But I thought that was interesting that Nintendo, instead of like Because, like, Sony and Microsoft, they text message you numbers. I think Apple is very similar as well, where they pop up that number on my iPhone when I try to log into something online. So it's interesting that Nintendo's kind of using a third-party authentication system rather than their own.
And I had it on my phone already, and I was like, well, why do I have this? And then I noticed that the account that's stored on there was for Rockstar Social Club, so for Grand Theft Auto, which I haven't played in forever. Is where that was. But yeah, most of the other companies have kind of the whole thing where they'll text you a code to get in and that type of thing. And then Steam has its own authenticator built into their app, so that helps too.
Tiger Claw in chat says, friend codes are just about the most secure system they had. You didn't use friend codes to log in, though. You still, like, friend code was like what identified your Nintendo Wii, let's say, because you didn't really log into your Nintendo Wii, and a friend code would identify your Wii, but nobody could, like, use, because you didn't log into it, nobody could use your Wii to buy, like, your information to buy stuff, unless they physically had your Nintendo Wii. And so friend codes were how you kind of, like, identified your Wii to someone else's Wii. It's so funny to say, but you know what I mean. So you didn't really have a login. Logins didn't start until they had the Wii U. And then that's when they used the Nintendo Network, and now they have just a unified Nintendo online system because they wanted to tie it all together with their mobile phones and all that. If you look at some of the early stuff about Nintendo Switch when they were actually calling it NX, you actually saw some of this Nintendo Online unified system between mobile and Wii U and NX, as they were calling it at the time, and so forth, because this was a big deal for Nintendo, was to, like, bring that all together. But anyway, AMO387 in our chat says you can set up Microsoft with Google Authenticator too. I didn't know that. I have something where they text message me, and I don't know if that's just through Google or what, but it doesn't use the actual third-party authenticator.
I prefer that. I mean, I get it that someone could, clone your phone or something like that, but I'm like, really? I doubt that anyone would do that. But, I kind of prefer that than having to open another app. Because a lot of times, where they're having me sign in because, you don't recognize this computer, it's always my own computer. Like, I've used this computer dozens of times to sign in. They're like, well, do you want us to remember this computer? Yes, please stop asking me to sign into this computer. And then 2 days later, I don't know this computer. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ, work.
All right. Well, anyway, I would strongly, strongly advise that you all enable your two-factor authentication on Nintendo if you haven't already. Especially if you have any type of credit card information saved on Nintendo, then you double want to do that. If you are the type that uses point cards to do everything, then you kind of at least have that type of security. But I don't know. I still wouldn't want people getting to my account, so I would highly recommend two-factor authentication unless there is some legit reason why you can't do it, which I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but maybe you don't have a cell phone. I don't know. Yeah, I agree with AMO387 in chat. Always set up two-factor authentication if it's offered. Absolutely. I'm definitely, especially because I have had my crap hacked before, and it's stupid. Like, Xbox 360 was the biggest example. Many years ago on the show, somebody logged into my account, spent like $100 on FIFA, and that ticked me off. Two-factor authentication wasn't really around as much then. But even more recently, I would say my Epic Game Store account was the one that also got hacked. And luckily, I didn't have a credit card. I have not bought anything with a credit card on the Epic Store, and I won't now because it was hacked. But I did find out they have two-factor authentication as well, so maybe I feel a little bit safer. But I still think Epic Store should put out those point cards for sure. All right. Anyway, let's move on and talk about a kind of a follow-up to something we've been following for the past couple weeks, and it has to do with Nintendo Switch productions. As you guys, of course, know, Nintendo Switches, they're a little hard to find right now, and we've been talking in previous episodes about how some of the COVID issues in Japan were stopping some of the production from happening for a little bit. Last week, we talked about that they're back on, but we still have, like, scalpers and robots that buy these things up just as soon as they're available. So Nintendo is really trying to get that worked out. Nikkei did an interview with Nintendo saying, "We hope suppliers will be responsive to the production increase, but for procurement of some parts, the outlook remains uncertain, and we can't forecast exactly how many Switches can be supplied. But their goal is 10%. According to Nintendo, the company hopes to produce about 10% more units of the Switch series in 2020, up from around 20 million last year. And I did a little double take when I heard Switch series, and I was like, oh yeah, the Switch Lite and the regular Switch would be a series, because I was like, ooh, are they giving away that there's another one? There might be, but we don't know anything about that yet. So they're talking about the Switch and the Switch Lite. Obviously, the supply chain is part of the problem here, which probably doesn't surprise people. We know there's been issues with factories because in other countries they're having to deal with these COVID issues as well and shutting down and so forth. So a lot of that's just kind of snowballed into what's going on now with Nintendo Switch and why they're getting to be a little harder to find. But Nintendo is committing to ramping up productions and has, I guess, signed the deals necessary to increase production. So we'll see. Again, please don't buy from scalpers and third-party sellers. Unfortunately, I kind of think, and I don't think the audience of this show would really do that type of stuff anyway. I think, unfortunately, the reality is we could all form a pact that we're not going to do that sort of thing, but there's going to be people that just don't know better, who have a lot of disposable money, who are willing to throw a lot of money at these things to make their kids happy. So I don't know if we alone here at OLR can stop it. But, urge your friends, urge people, please don't buy from these third-party sellers, because it only creates problems for everybody. But that's all we can really do. All right, moving on. Dark Sakura.
Sorry, I thought I hit my unmute button. I was going to say, but Rob, Karen needs one now. You don't understand.
I know. It's not Karen that needs one. It's Karen Jr. that needs one. But anyway.
My little Carlisle needs one now. Where's your manager? No. Right? Anyway. So people...
My Hannah, spelled with a silent C and an extra H. My little Hannah needs a Switch right now.
Rob, that's Hannah.
Hannah.
Anyway. So going, though, back to Nintendo systems, though, we have that are available to people in Japan. So, you know what it is? It's a Super Famicom. So there is a group called the Japan Retro Game Association who has a buttload of Super Famicom ready to hand out to families with children under 16 who can pay the shipping fees. But basically, those are the most eligible of them. So they have kind of a lottery system open up. It's open until tomorrow in Japan, April 27th, where, you are chosen. You just pay the shipping fees and you get yourself a Super Famicom. It looks like they have 100 units. So, some of them are pretty yellow in that classic, Super Famicom, Super Nintendo style. But, it looks like some of the games that are in here, we have some Final Fantasy 3 and Final Fantasy 2 and some Donkey Kong Country. I'm just trying to look at the picture, get a close-up on it. So they're sending some good games with it. That's really awesome. And of course, I've seen stuff that, would pay, out the nose for over here for classic games. You can get super cheap in Japan. I'm not saying, go run out to the store, but you got Yahoo Auction, you have Yahoo Japan, you've got all kinds of different, ways of having classic games shipped to you. So I think with such a massive log on there too, or shoot, people get an EverDrive for it. Not that I'm saying necessarily play the ROMs, but this is the time to do it. You'd be amazed at everything that you'd have access for and a new discovery that kids are going to be able to make for their games.
Well, and I was just going to say, this is a nice little thing for Karen to get little Skylar, and that's spelled Skylahr, out of her hair for a little bit. She doesn't need to buy the Switch from a third-party seller.
But don't forget, Mackenzie wants to play too.
I know, and she can get, for her twins, she can get a Super Famicom, because you know what? Kids need to grow up on the classics, right?
No, but this is in Japan, so it would be someone with, like, one of those Kira names that are, like, the equivalent of our... Kira means sparkle. It's, one of those... So they call them sparkly names, where they don't actually are like a real name. They're just more like something that sounded pretty. So I really am trying to think of what a good millennial Japanese housewife name is.
It's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. But at any rate, this would be in Japan. So not a bad thing, you know, and quite likely I think they would take better care of the systems than folks over here might. So in general.
Yeah, and also to be clear, this is not the Super Famicom Mini. This is a legit Super Famicom, and you know that still play. You know, we were joking earlier in the show about, you know, consoles that are built like a brick and still run solid. Super Nintendo is another very good example, and Super Famicom, of course, is another very good example of like I do you know anyone with a broken Super Nintendo? I mean, they might look gross as hell.
It has to be physically broken.
Yeah, you cannot break those things unless you want to. I mean, like, you know, if I challenged you to break one, you probably could. But I'm saying, like, those things do not die unless you killed it.
Well,
they might look ugly because they brown that with that oxygen thing or whatever. But, yeah, you...
Or smokers.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, those things are hard to break. So it's not surprising that there's 100... work in Super Famicom somebody has in a warehouse somewhere.
So, wow, you want to know what the number one Kidakida name is in Japan?
What is that?
Caesar. Shiza.
Okay. All right. I didn't... You learned
number
something
three,
new.
Number three is Loveha.
AMO387, talk about the GameCube. The GameCube was great. Someone could break into your house, you could knock them out with your GameCube, call the police, and go back to playing Metroid Prime just fine.
Well, and it has that handle, yeah, on it. Perfect.
The GameCube had that convenient little carrying handle, so you could just pick it up and thwack somebody with it. I mean,
have you ever dropped a GameCube on your foot on the corner?
No.
I did.
No.
While it was running a game, man, and we were still playing Soul Calibur.
The GameCube was such a badass little system. It really did not get enough credit.
Like, well, if you didn't mod it, you could just get one of the disc loaders and play all your imports. Because, I mean, I was playing... Remember when I decided that I was going to play Dobutsu no Mori E+, mm-hmm. to try to get better at reading Japanese?
Mm-hmm.
I learned very quickly that getting better at reading it and actually understanding all, but, you know, I was maybe getting through 75% of the game okay, but I was like, is this someone's name?
You know what else
what
I...
Is...
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just like, and that's how I learned like half of the Japanese names playing that.
You know, you know what I miss about classic consoles are the splash screens when you first boot up the console. And the GameCube had a badass one, that little do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- loading screen. I'm sure you guys have seen your short little parody GameCube loading screens. And then, of course, the Dreamcast, right, or the original PlayStation. I kind of miss that. Consoles don't really have that so much anymore. Like, I guess, yeah. I guess, like, the Xbox 360 had that little, like, but it's
nothing
it's
is
not
going to be
exciting.
The OG PlayStation one.
Yeah, that did.
Which is one of my ringtones on my phone. It's actually one of my alarms.
I would say,
and for the record,
I would say the GameCube was actually a little better than the PlayStation. But I loved, like, the PlayStation was one of those, like, theater sound tests you hear before the beginning of the movie. You know, like, like the THX.
Like THX,
yeah, the
thing.
THX.
It was totally like the THX thing. And for the record, if no one knows, Tom Nook's Japanese name is Tanukichi.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Do you know what I learned about, and you probably already knew this, but I didn't know this, and I learned this today about Animal Crossing and the funny localization thing. The reason why the turnips are the stock market is that the word for turnip and the word for stock are the same in Japan. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I never knew that until today.
Of course, to me, they're just donks.
Yeah, no, I know. And I was just always like, oh, it's just silly. It's turnips, you know, whatever. It's a silly game. I'm like, oh, that's clever. How about that?
But, like, I actually, you know, wasn't really surprised at all because, you know, the character Kappen, I was like, oh, he's a Kappa. And mm-hmm. That was his name in Japanese, you know. Mm-hmm. And to go ahead and let people know, the little indention on his head is because Kappa have a bowl of water built into their heads. And the way you defeat a Kappa is to give him a cucumber and he will be thankful and bow. And the water will spill out of his head and he loses his powers.
I thought he just had a giant bald spot like me.
Girl.
All right. Anyway, let's move on.
Do you have water sitting on top of your head? Are you really
not
a giant?
Not in the current. You don't know what? You don't know what's under this hat. Anyway, let's move on and let's get into the next story, Loki.
All right, so this is pretty cool. Since we've been talking about the Final Fantasy VII Remake, and it is obviously one of the bigger games of the first part of this year, it should be not a big surprise that Square Enix has reported that they have shipped 3.5 million copies. I guess that's shipped and sold digitally, because now we're including those. So that's pretty much that's a pretty decent size amount already, and kind of hopefully that will be enough to them, because I remember like back when there was like Tomb Raider and stuff, they were not so satisfied with the sales of that. But being that this is something they're kind of lauding, I would imagine that it's good news for them.
Well, there was an article that was comparing some of the sales, and like God of War in the same time frame was like 3.1 million, and that was a huge game. We just had Jamie talk about Animal Crossing moving 5 million units, although I believe that captured an entire month. And this is just capturing
3 days.
We're not done with the month yet. But I mean, we don't have to compare like who's got the bigger wang. You know, these are both incredibly well sold games in this type of era. So I feel like it's enough to justify the game's existence and make sure a part two will come.
Oh yeah, I'm sure the sequels are going to be coming.
For sure. Because I don't think Final Fantasy 13 sold 3.5 million in the same time frame. Maybe it did. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look. And we ended up getting two sequels for that. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, 3.5 million. That's great. That's a great number. So,
yeah.
People wanted that Final Fantasy VII remake real bad.
That they did for several years.
All right. Well, another game people are wanting real bad, apparently, is Valorant. You know, that's the Riot shooter game that's a little bit Overwatch-ish. We talked a little bit about it on last week's show because we were talking about some of the anti-cheat system and how some of that was controversial. Well, this week we're talking a little bit about two different sides of Valorant and some of the problems that Twitch is having because of the beta key handout system. If you were not aware, one of the ways to get into the Valorant beta is to watch people play it on Twitch for, what, like 2 hours? And then you can possibly get a beta key. I'm not sure if it's guaranteed or if it's possible. You have to watch at least 2 hours, and I guess then you get the drop or whatever. But what's happening is that you have these Twitch channels that are streaming Valorant 24/7, but they're not really there playing it. Like, it's just them sitting there, or it's just, you know, maybe somebody running a rerun of an old stream, but they're not using the rerun mechanism to do it. They're streaming it like it's live. And so they're doing all these like weird things to kind of game the system. And then of course you have those really shitty people that are doing things like, if you go sub for my stream, you'll get a better chance at getting a key or something. I don't know. I don't know what these people are doing, but there's always somebody that's going to try to take advantage of somebody else. Please remember, you do not have to pay other Twitch streamers anything in order to get a Valorant beta key, or really any type of key, unless the publisher's official Twitter says something. Like, I think Blizzard did something like this once, where you got a skin when you watch certain people's streams, but the official Blizzard account tweeted about it and had a whole thing on what to watch and when. If the official Riot or Valorant account isn't saying it, it ain't true. So just remember that as you go on your search for a beta key. Act Deft in chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork saying, oh yeah, I heard of this. They're using the video on demand and restreaming it like if it were live. Yeah, that is another thing that people are doing. But no matter which way you slice it, you know, there's a lot of people doing it legitimately too. Let's not focus on the bad news, but that is happening. It is an interesting side effect of this mechanism. But the other interesting side effect of this way of distributing the game is it's getting huge views for Valorant, and it's one of the top viewed games on Twitch right now, which is a great way to get people talking about your game. Valorant is one of the top titles and usually has double what like Fortnite and Grand Theft Auto 5 and so forth have right now, at least, you know. I know these numbers fluctuate depending on who's streaming and so forth, but it is doing very, very well. And part of this is really because of, you know, how they're doing it. Valorant now also has the title for the most hours watched of a specific game in a single day on Twitch with 34 million. Combine this pandemic, we're all stuck at home situation with everybody wants to get a beta key, and you got a recipe for why a lot of people are doing this. And this game isn't
I don't know if that's like a legit win if you're like basically incentivizing your stream people to watch your stream to get something like that. That seems a little ridiculous.
It is, but it's not like they're the first to do it. Like I said, Blizzard has done this type of stuff before as well, and many other companies do it. And for what it's worth, you know, I'm not going to dog on the game because A, I haven't played it. B, and I'm not going to watch somebody stream for 2 hours to do it. I'm going to watch somebody stream for 2 hours because they're playing something and are a personality that I really enjoy watching. However, you know, this game will come out of beta at some point and we'll all be able to play it openly. Maybe I'll check it out then, but I still think it's kind of noteworthy because not every game takes off even doing that with the same level of success. So it must speak to the strength of this game in particular and what people are drawn to with this game. And, you know, I will say the launch of it and the timing of it and when they're doing this is at a pretty good time because it is kind of a competitor in the same space as Overwatch, right? And Overwatch is kind of in a slow spot right now. Yes, I know they just released Echo, but let's be real, it's kind of a lame duck until Overwatch 2 comes out because that's the big thing we all know Blizzard's really working on. And I'm sure, you know, when Overwatch 2 comes out, it's going to snatch wigs and break the records on Twitch all over again and all that stuff. But until then, there's room in the space for something else to kind of sneak up. So I think that's, you know, you have all these different factors, I think, as to why Valorant is succeeding. But one of the biggest things we can't ignore is that, you know what, the game is pretty good. And people like it well enough. You could say the exact same thing about like Apex Legends. All happened before Fortnite did their 2.0 and all that, right? So, you know, sometimes it's a good time to strike. Questbuster in chat says, it was funny seeing one streamer that had massive Valorant numbers run with Drops Not Enabled as a stream name for a while, and then their numbers had several tens of thousands fewer viewers than they used to have. Wow. Hype Mayhem says, I've been watching Valorant for years since it was called Counter-Strike Go. Ooh, I think that's Shade. All right. Anyhow, so at some point I'll have to check this game out. I liked Overwatch well enough, and I'm willing to check out, you know, some of the competitors and what they bring. I tried that Paladins for a little bit. That was interesting. And I know our buddy Flacco Jones is a huge fan of that and streams that occasionally. So, you know, there's room in the pool for multiple shooty games to do well. So good luck to all of you. But don't run fake streams just to get more viewers. Like, that's, you know, look, I'd love to have more viewers and subs here at VOG Network, but there's lines I'm just not willing to cross, okay? So we want to be ethical in the way we're doing things, all right? Anyhow, let's move on. Let's go to something more traditional. Every week here on Orange Lounge Radio, we like to take a look back down memory lane and spotlight one classic game of the week. Dark Soccer steps into the gaming vault and says, Hey, this system has a pretty cool splash screen and a pretty cool game that you should be playing on it. So, Dark Sakura, what is the classic game of the week?
Well, I think we're about to make Act Deft really happy because it's Kirby's Dream Land. Yay! I freaking love this game! So Kirby's Dream Land is a side-scrolling action platformer that was developed by HAL Laboratory and published by Nintendo for the Game Boy. It came out in 1992. It is the first Kirby game and the debut of Kirby. I am currently surrounded by six Kirbys right now. One of them you got me, Rob. Hello?
Sorry, I used this opportunity to run to the kitchen, but yes.
I wasn't getting any feedback, so I was just making sure that I was coming through. Okay.
You're good. I'm used. See, this is a camera trick because the camera's not on me, so I don't have to be sitting there. So anyway, but yes, I did get you a Kirby when I was in New York. Yes.
Yes, I love my Kirby pillow. But at any rate, Kirby's Dream Land was developed by none other than Sakurai Masahiro. Fantastic. Well, you know, he also gave us the Smash series. So it was, it had so much that was involved in it. It really was quite the dynamic game, I think so. So moving on with this one, it was, it's considered an action platformer, and it, you know, had side-scrolling, two-dimensional levels. You know, you had your foreground and, you know, your main ground and everything. And the way that Kirby, rules is by sucking. Yeah. So his main method of attack is to inhale enemies and objects. You know, he's basically every two-year-old. Don't put that in your mouth, except he does. So So at any rate, and by the way, going back to what Fifth Dream asked, who came first, Kirby or Yoshi? There was concept for Yoshi drawn for Super Mario Brothers 2, so I think Yoshi was conceived first. Anyway, going back to Kirby. Basically, he would also, you know, to attack other enemies, he could spit the enemies back out, or he could swallow and digest them slowly for 10,000 years. Oh, sorry, that's the Sarlacc. Anyway, the other things that he can do is that by sucking in just air, he can hover and, you know, inflate himself and fly a little bit. But the only way he can attack is to release that puff of air, which would cancel his flight. So, you know, kind of think of it like, you know, an air bladder and how fish stay afloat, kind of. Anyway, the game has 5 levels, and the levels are actually made up of rooms, which, you know, honestly, pretty novel concept for a platformer. So each of these different rooms lead Kirby to a different area, and some of them are doors to hidden places or different pathways, so you can beat the levels in different ways. The doors act as your checkpoints, so if you die in the game, you don't have to restart the level, you just return to the room that you were in. Excuse me. You know, and the way, though, that Kirby would suffer damage is if he touches an enemy or a dangerous object, he'll lose his hit. Depending on the enemy or the object, he would lose more or less. If all of them are lost, he falls into a bottomless pit, and then you lose your life and have to restart that doorpost that you came in. So, of course, losing them all, game over, yada yada. Kirby's Dream Land had very traditional power-ups because, you know, in this one, remember, he didn't have the copy abilities in later games. This was the first one. So he could pick up different food, like spicy curry gives him fire breath, or a mint leaf, in the Japanese version of the sweet potato, would get puffs of air rather quickly that he could let out without losing flight. And then there was the boss levels, you know, so he could obtain the sparkling stars. Most bosses would be beaten by, you know, sucking up a projectile or an object to throw back at him. Although one of my favorite ones was, and actually it's even mentioned in the thing that I'm looking at, was Kabula, where it's basically a shooter level. So that's pretty cool. And yes, Agdef says the Japanese name Hoshinokabi, which is basically Kirby's Dream. So, but anyway, or Dream of Kirby. I always get it a little bit backwards. But at any rate, you could also accumulate points and get items. You could get extra lives if you have enough points. But it doesn't have save functions. You can't really save your game. You have to start over. You know, old school, no battery backup in this sucker. So, and yes, I will be getting to all of these facts, FDF. Thank you very much. Like I said, it was developed by Sakurai Masahiro of HAL Laboratory. Kirby was supposed to be a placeholder character. They couldn't really, you know, they were going to make something a little bit more sophisticated, right? And he was called Popopo, and they were going to call the title Twinkle Popo. Although it looks like it's Tinkadoo Popo, which would be Tinkle Popo, so go fig. But at any rate, he was named Kirby, and the game was renamed Hoshinokabi, or Kirby of the Stars. I always... You know what? Another thing about Hoshi is it could also, I think, mean wish, so I kind of like the double name on it. At any rate, they decided to make him pink, and Miyamoto actually thought he should be yellow, but not Nintendo agreed with Sakurai. So he has always been pink, and a yellow Kirby has denoted the second player when you're doing multiplayer. So moving forward, music was done by Ishikawa Jun, who has been the regular composer for the Kirby series. Even on the most recent one, Kirby Star Allies, which I need to get my own copy of. I borrowed JD's copy, like, indefinitely, and then finally gave it back. But even some of the songs have been reused, like in Super Smash Brothers, and in a the Green Green stage of Super Smash Bros. Melee. So it's all over the place. But at any rate, game has an aggregate score of 62.22% on game rankings with 9 reviews. So it's on that ranking alone, it's 17th best gameplay games.
With a 62?
Yeah, I don't know, people.
That's not a very good score. I mean, but
9 reviews, though, Rob.
Yeah,
so
who cares what they think?
People go to leave more reviews.
Who cares what they think, yeah.
But Kirby's Dream Land, as of May 28th, 1995, sold 1.3 million copies, and to date, over 5 million copies worldwide. And honored for having innovations in the platformer genre. So we do have that. It has basically the game being successful was also attributed somewhat to Iwata Satoru, you know, our long lost Nintendo boss, who said had a very simple minded passion for creating games and, you know, really loved this kind of game. And it was also considered to be a fun yet relaxing game. Some people said it was too elementary, but I think those people are wrong, you know. It's meant to be fun.
Well, and I think it being on the Game Boy is a good boost as well, because, you know, we forget how transformative the Game Boy really was to making portable gaming a thing. Portable gaming was really not a huge thing until the Game Boy made it huge. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and again, it was the first intro into it. I think it really laid down a great foundation for a series of games. I mean, I really thought that Star Allies was way fun, and it kind of brought back a lot of, you know, what I loved about the first game. But at any rate, we have so many Kirby games. So starting at the beginning, the first sequel was Kirby's Adventure for the NES, which was the first game that introduced power stealing, and I think I've done Kirby's Adventure for a classic game. We have had spin-offs like Kirby's Air Ride, a pinball game called Kirby's Pinball Land, a golf hybrid called Kirby's Dream Course. Kirby's Dream Land had a sequel in 1995 called Kirby's Dream Land 2 that had the copy mechanic from Kirby's Adventure. Kirby Superstar had a shortened remake of Kirby's Dream Land called Spring Breeze, as Agnieszka, you know, beautifully mentioned in chat. And it did have the copy ability, and you could summon helpers for co-op, but it was, of course, missing the Castle Lololo stage and the Kabula boss fight, which the Kabula fight is one of my favorites. And instead, La 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 became the boss for Float Island instead. Kirby Super Superstar Ultra had an expansion with Revenge of the King, harder version of Spring Breeze. And by the way, you could unlock the hard mode for Kirby's for Kirby's Dream Land, just saying. You also have Kirby and King DDD as characters in Smash Brothers, and they have their alternate costumes that are monochrome that look like the Game Boy's graphics, and even some of the levels and games. I was like, it's Wispy Woods! So yeah, there you go. We have one of, I think, the best games ever, not just, you know, a Game Boy game. This game is classic, and it's classic for a reason, and I, you know, I probably should have done it a while back, but this has been the month for me going, why did I do that game? Or did I do that game?
Yeah, this is you rediscovering all the games you haven't done as classic game of the week. So, I mean, I know you've done other Kirby games. You've done several other Kirby games.
I did,
but
Kirby's Adventure.
Yeah,
I did.
But not,
I think I've only done Kirby's Adventure.
But not this one. Well, there you go. There it is, your classic game of the week. Who doesn't love Kirby? Besides ActDef, we all know he loves Kirby.
And everyone who follows me on Twitter or one of the sacred few on Facebook, I think I did recently post the first level music, every iteration of it that had ever existed in a game. I think I posted it on my Twitter last night. So
now,
enjoy.
You said as part of that, one of the original names of that was Tinkle Lolo, was it? Tinkle something?
It's written as Tinkeru.
Ah, well,
but they're calling it Twinkle Popo, but it's written Tinkeru.
It made me think of Tingle, which of course made me think of Loki, which made me think of, and I didn't know this, did you know there's a Tingle outfit in Animal Crossing? It was in my Avis today. There was
Are you talking about the Kappa outfit?
No, it's like they call it the Sprite, or what is it called? The Sprite outfit?
Oh, yeah, the Sprite. Yeah, there's like a pink one and all other colors.
It's definitely a Tingle outfit. You just need the hat. This is great. Anyway, Darkstalker, I think you have to peace out because of work, right? Did you want to do your rapid fire stories real quick and then say goodbye?
Yeah, sure. And we also do have a couple of emails, but I'll leave those for you.
I can read those.
Kind. That's... And make sure you empty the trash when you're done.
Yeah. Yes, I will. Not.
Anyway, the Pokemon Company has released Pokemon backgrounds that you can use for your Zoom calls. There is a Magikarp one. Is that a Magikarp one? No, this is a... Well, there better be a Magikarp. Yeah, there's a Magikarp one, which I'm going to use. If those work on WebEx, you know I'm going to use those too, but at work. But at any rate, yeah, you can have all kinds of different neat-looking Pokemon backgrounds. There's a Mew and Mewtwo and all kinds of stuff. It's really cute. And then there's also going to be, dun-dun-dun, a new Splatfest. And it is a rematch. Splatoon 2 Splatfest is happening in May. And it is, again, mayonnaise versus ketchup. Mayonnaise better win, because ketchup is gross.
Disagree. Mayonnaise won the first time, which was a travesty. So maybe this is ketchup's chance to take its rightful crown.
Maybe it's the more superior Japanese mayonnaise, which has a bit more vinegar to it.
Anyway.
Kewpie mayonnaise is amazing. Sorry,
I will not be playing because it was gross because the things you're splatting actually look like ketchup and mayonnaise. I'm sorry. I'm not going to subject myself to something to be splatted with mayonnaise. That's disgusting.
Yeah, that's how I feel about ketchup. Ketchup is disgusting.
Why don't we do like barbecue sauce versus mustard?
Because I don't like mustard.
I like them both, so
you know what we need to do?
Huh?
We need to have, because I'm thinking of pancakes. We need peanut butter versus syrup.
I don't know a lot of people to do peanut butter, but I'm not opposed to that idea.
People don't do peanut butter?
I don't know a lot of people to do peanut butter. It's like always syrup.
Okay, before I go, I have to tell you what my newest food like obsession has been.
Okay.
Because I eat waffles every morning now. And waffles. And I have been taking unsalted cream butter.
Dan. And waffle.
Drizzling raw honey over it.
Yum.
And it has been a delight. The end. You're welcome.
Waffles
go eat.
And honey. All right, Darkstalker, thank you for being on the show. I mean, you're always here, but I feel like I need to say thank you anyway. Do you have any last thoughts for our listeners before you head off to sleeping for work?
Pray for me. I start back to work tomorrow, and I am apprehensive. Hello?
Yeah.
Did I kick myself out?
No, okay. You're here.
No, I accidentally closed my Discord window. I'm like, oh, crap. I'm apprehensive, but I think I'm going to do well, and my doctor is still like, hey, if you need to log off, do so, but then I go into training for a week, so that means, again, not having to talk a lot, not being on the phone a lot, so I think a couple of weeks, I'm making it through the show great today, only needed my inhaler once, so let's take that as a good sign, right?
Yeah, well, as you requested, here are some thoughts and prayers.
Oh, you know what, thoughts and prayers do jack shit, so just send me money.
Okay. Maybe. We'll see. All right. Thank you again, Darkstalker. We'll see you next week.
All right. Love everybody. Love and a peace and reject false icons. Bye.
All right. Bye. Loki, you got some rapid fire news for us.
Sure do. So Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to be coming to Game Pass. So that's awesome. Starting May 7th. So if you haven't gotten a chance to play the game, now you can play the game. At least if you have Xbox.
That would be me. That I'm a perfect candidate for this. Thank you.
You are, and you'll probably enjoy it. I don't know. I didn't enjoy as much as Grand Theft Auto because there's a lot of, like, simulation stuff in it, like having to eat and sleep and do work and stuff like that. I'd rather just go shooty, shooty, bang, bang, but, you know, I guess there's games for everybody. This is where I need to get this on PC so I can play with a trainer and then not have to do all that stuff.
There you go.
That's where I need to do it.
Now you're talking.
And then WWE 2K is skipping 2020. Apparently, 2K Games is going to be sharing more details. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the fact that the last one sucked really bad. It was really a buggy piece of crap. So I'm sure it's just because of the COVID or something like that and not because it's absolute garbage. But we'll see. Uh-huh. Nothing will be missed.
All right. Moving on to Arcade Archives. Do any of you like to download the Arcade Archives stuff on the Switch? And I think they have them on PlayStation 4, kind of like it's MAME that you pay for, but that makes it legal and okay. So, you know, downloading arcade ROMs on your Switch so you can kind of take them on the go and PlayStation. Then you get like trophies and you get to use your good controllers and all that good stuff. So there are some new Arcade Archive games that are coming in April of 2020 this year, I guess, this month. So I guess they better be out soon because I haven't heard of these games hitting yet. But these games include Burger Time, Burnin' Rubber, Trio the Punch, and Darwin 4078. You know, I'm all about Burger Time coming out. Maybe this is meaning they're confirmed now to come out in the near future. Some other titles you may have forgot that were announced previously that still haven't arrived yet include Sunset Riders by Konami, and Versus Wrecking Crew was also one of those games that's supposed to be coming. So Guerrilla War by SNK, and there's other stuff too. So there's a lot of those Arcade Archive games if you weren't aware. So if you haven't seen them yet, go check it out because soon you get Burger Time. Anyhow, one place that doesn't have Arcade Archives games yet, but maybe they'll get them, I don't know, is Google Stadia. Yes, Google Stadia is still a thing, and they are giving that away, that pro pack, for 2 months, if you weren't aware. But if you don't want to keep it, make sure you cancel it. However, they're about to do a stream, and that stream is coming up on April 28th. So that is what? That's like in 2 days, right? So, 2 days. So in 2 days, they're going to be doing this stream, and the stream will be at 9 o'clock Pacific time, 9 a.m., and 12 o'clock Eastern time, and 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, depending on what time zone you're in overseas. It is a new Stadia Connect. We have no idea what they're going to be announcing in it. We would theorize that they could have some new exclusive games they're revealing. My thought is it should be about the time that Google is talking about how non-pro subscribers can get into it. Especially in the state of the world that we're in right now, I think there's more people that want to take advantage of it. And yes, I know they have that 2 month offer, but you know, when do I just get to, you know, without a pro subscription or whatever, fire up my browser and play Stadia? So maybe this is going to talk about kind of that future of what Google Stadia looks like. That's my thought anyway. But we'll see. And of course, you know, some really good games are going to get some eyeballs on it. So we'll see. I hope they're not just announcing, ooh, we got these games that have been on other platforms for 2 years. Because that's what killed the Wii U, y'all. And hopefully Google learned from that. Okay, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates. I know things are a little slow right now, but we'll talk about it anyway. Loki, what do we have in the U.S.?
There's some stuff coming out. So we have Gears Tactics coming out on PC, moving out on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Sakura Wars on PlayStation 4. SnowRunner on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Telling Lies on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. We have Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 Campaign Remastered on PC and Xbox One. And Street Rage 4 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. And then there was a digital game I was going to mention as well coming out called Pocket Arcade Story from Kerosoft. You may remember them from such games as, of course, Game Dev Saga, or Game Dev Story. So that was a fun little iOS game and Android game. Now that's going to be on the Switch.
Neat. Going over to Japan, kind of slow on the Nintendo Switch this week. The only title I see coming out is Moving Out, is coming out on the Switch this week. Going over to the PlayStation 4, there's not a lot there either. I guess it's a very slow week over in Japan, probably due to what's going on in the world. So no real big releases to speak of this week in Japan. How about the UK, Loki?
UK, we've got Sakura Wars coming out on PlayStation 4. Moving out as well on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. I don't think this is coming out, but they still have it listed there. Fast and Furious Crossroads, I believe that's probably been delayed. Daymare 1998 Black Edition on PlayStation 4. And a game called Arcade Spirits, which is on PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch. And I was trying to look at that because the little icon looks like a little Taito thing or something. But apparently it is some sort of visual novel set in 1980 or set in a world where the 1983 video game market crash never happened.
Oh, interesting.
It's a romantic comedy. It looks interesting. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Fascinating. All right. All right. I guess you'd have all this commercial shovelware garbage. I mean, not to say that stuff doesn't exist today, but that's what really killed the Atari 2600 was, you know, like anybody could make a game for it. So you had like the Purina Dog Chow game and like all these like really like crap shovelware type of games. And that's why Nintendo, when they released in the U.S., had the seal of quality. And, you know, that, it's the crash is very interesting and where gaming is because of it.
Thrown out the window once the Wii came out.
Yeah, right. I'd be very curious, like, kind of what their take on it is. So I'm curious about their narrative on that crash never happening. I think that's a very clever idea for a game. All right, let's move on to emails. Every week you guys send us emails. Participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send us emails. And we read some of our favorites here on the air. And we do have some emails this week. We have a couple of good ones tonight. I mean, all the emails we get are great, but it's always nice to have some really good talking points in your emails. So let's get to our first email tonight from Redertainment, who says, "Hello, peoples," and then links us to an article that he discusses. "This week, World of Warcraft unveiled official controller support for the first time. I'm curious what people with more MMORPG experience than I feel about this move. Could this lead to an expansion of WoW to the consoles, or just making the game more accessible to players through methods that they're already familiar with?" I believe Blizzard responded to this on their official forums and insisted it's more about accessibility and that you're not going to be able to do everything in the game via a controller. And this is not some type of thing to take on Final Fantasy 14. But I don't know. There's a part of me that kind of says, yeah, right, to a lot of that. And the fact that maybe they're having to give in a little bit because, like, every other MMO that's out there right now is for PC and I mean, even things like Black Desert, you know, which is a pretty big MMO that, you know, I just haven't personally played a lot of. They exist on consoles as well as PC. So I think they realize that that is, you know, maybe by having that controller, they might be able to lure a few more people into it. I don't know if WoW's going to feel great with a controller because the game just wasn't designed with that in mind. I think it's an interesting pivot, but I'll be curious to see what kinds of things they let you do with a controller. And I'm all for accessibility. I mean, if it's going to let more people play WoW, then I think that is a great thing. So, yeah, let's see where they go with it. Anyway, moving on with Redertainment's email because there's more. "Also, have you people been experimenting with crafting your own recipes during our time of social isolating? I've come up with my own cocktail recipe, the double ginger, double martini." Ooh, I love ginger drinks. You know, my favorite drink, absolute favorite drink, is a Moscow Mule. And that's because I love ginger stuff. So, it has to be served in the little copper mug to keep it cold. So, the double ginger, double martini. 2 parts vodka or rum, depending on your preference. 1 part ginger beer. 1 part ginger honey syrup. Combine the ingredients into a cocktail shaker, shake, then pour into a glass of your choice and stir, because why the fuck not? Because Rob Roberts prefers shaken, not stirred. Just saying. "Finally, thanks again for posting episodes of OLR on Spotify." You're welcome. Thanks to Spotify for having us, and thank you guys for listening. Stay care, Redertainment. This message has been brought to you by the Double Ginger Double Martini. What sounds like a very good drink. So I don't really keep a lot of alcohol at home. I have like a little bit of wine, but maybe we can go forth into the world again. I can talk to some of my alcoholic friends.
I keep thinking about every time I go to the store, I'm like, I should grab a bottle of something.
Right? It's yeah, I still have like bottles of wine. I can't open wine because Alan doesn't drink at all, and I'm not going to get through a bottle of wine by myself. Like, I'm just not. Like, I'll pass out by the time I'm halfway through. Anyway, next email, Martin from Belgium emails us saying, "Hello, LR. Martin from Belgium here. You were talking last week about games to stay fit with during the COVID lockdown. I've been playing a game called Zwift. It's basically an MMO cycling game in which you ride an indoor bicycle with other people around the world. You just run the game on your laptop or iOS device. The game connects via Bluetooth to your indoor trainer setup. You just use a regular bicycle hooked up to a smart trainer, which sends your power data to the game. The trainers range anywhere from about $180 for the cheapest to over $1,000 for setups that simulate hills, road surface, etc. Oh, things that must like vibrate and do resistance. That's interesting. You can sign up for virtual races or just join a friendly group ride. The game has chat. Players give each other little thumbs up, encouragements, and so forth. You see the little flags for players around you that show which country they're from. Anyway, it's an extremely fun way to race your friends virtually or to stay fit during lockdown. Thought it would be interesting to share. Thanks for continuing the shows and stay healthy. All the best, Martin from Belgium. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there was a picture that was attached to this. And if you want to look it up, it's called Zwift. So think Swift, but with a Z. And yeah, I was looking at it and it looks pretty cool. I mean, that $180 for the cheap one price tag kind of scares me. And this might shock you. I don't own a bike. I used to, but it got stolen when I was in college and I just never replaced it because bike thieves are assholes. But yeah, I never really picked up another bike, which is kind of a shame because we live in a really good biking town. Like, they actually have protected bike lanes downtown, which you don't see everywhere, which means like you have the bike lane and then, or like, no, what is it? The cars are parked. You have the bike lane, then the parked cars. So that way people like can't hit you in the bike lane. It's kind of fascinating. I should get a bike. Maybe I should put that on my birthday list. But I don't have one. But this sounds like a neat setup. I love the idea of gamifying it and making it a little more virtual. Also, here where we live, we're surrounded by all these river trails. And so it would be hard to tell me to not bike outdoors. But I guess transporting a bike can be a pain in the ass. You have to bike to the trail before you can really get on the bike trail. But yeah, I don't know. People ride a long, long way on those bikes. But I think that was neat. I think that's a neat little thing that more people should check out. So Zwift is where you can check that out. All right. Again, if you want to email us for a future week, participate at orangeloungeradio.com is the place to send your email. We'll be looking forward to some emails next week. In the meantime, a few more stories for you guys. Let's go to Loki.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about, I swear it's like a constant topic with NVIDIA streaming service and what it's losing. So more games, unfortunately, are being removed from their service starting this week. So apparently they have lost games from Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment, Xbox Game Studios, which, I mean, that makes sense with their own streaming services, Codemasters and Clay Entertainment. They have been removed as of Friday. So that kind of sucks.
So what does NVIDIA have left on their streaming service?
I don't know, but see, their streaming service is not necessarily, I mean, it's your own library. So it's basically these companies just saying, hey, yeah, we know that you purchased this stuff already, but we're just not going to let you.
Well, isn't it more the fact that NVIDIA is charging their $5 a month fee and game companies are, I guess, not happy that they're not getting a part of that? Although I thought it came up in a preview, because this story's come up a few times now, because Blizzard took their stuff off, then and Activision, of course, a part of that, and so on. So we've got all these game companies that took their games off the service, and there's like it came out one of those stories that they actually were getting a share of the profits, but it wasn't enough because people always want more profits.
Yeah, well, whatever. You know what? I'm sure they'll try to come up with their own game streaming services, and I'm sure no one will do it because it's going to be too spread thin. Really, what needs to happen is just people just need to come up with – there needs to be some sort of independent solution that just does the whole Steam Link, but, like, from afar.
I agree with Pod Culture in our chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, who says, how would this be any different from renting a computer? Yeah, they didn't pull their games out of computer cafes, right? I know that's a stretch, and that isn't really a part of our culture here in the U.S. Like, I know they exist. Well, in this pandemic situation, they don't exist, but they exist. But certainly in, like, you know, Korea and some of the Asian market, like, computer cafes are very commonplace. And so, I mean, I guess you also kind of pay for games on a time scale, but it would be weird if, like, you went to one of these places and you couldn't play games that you've actually bought. You know what I mean? So I think that's a good comparison. You're kind of renting somebody else's computer, right?
Not necessarily, but, like, I get it. I don't know. It doesn't matter to me because I'm like, I'm not going to use the service anyways, because I would play on my PC, my laptop, and wherever I'm going. So if I'm going somewhere else, I wouldn't have access to it. I mean, I'm not going to want to try to even play a game, let alone, like, you know, playing like Ornn and stuff just drains my battery as it is. I can't imagine what streaming a game on my phone would even do. It would toast that battery.
All right, Bobby Blackwell's in chat with the harsh dose of reality, who says, broadcasting over the internet is the issue. If you rent a computer, it's not broadcasting over the internet to you, but you're still broadcasting it over the internet. It's not the computer that's the problem. It's the act of broadcasting it over the internet. Even if you're the only viewer, it's still being broadcast to you. So, I mean, that's essentially what Google Stadia is doing as well. But yes, I mean, Google, that's why not every game is on Google Stadia, and it's a different model. Yes, I understand the difference here is because, you know, you're buying those games on Stadia and that's part of the agreement. Whereas here, you know, you're trying to play your existing library. So, but I mean, people broadcast tons of games here on this site on Twitch and you don't necessarily see the kickback, but again, you're not playing it. Oh, I know a good example though. Okay. How about PlayStation 4's Share Play? Isn't that broadcasting too? And doesn't Sony, like by default, don't all the games on PlayStation 4 have that share play thing going? And that's what you're doing, right? You're broadcasting to one person, but it's like a privatized environment. You do have to have PlayStation Plus, so maybe there's some type of money thing going on there. Maybe something in the agreements with the game makers for PlayStation 4 are kind of like signed into that. But that is worth acknowledging. Share play is kind of a similar setup, right? Bobby says Sony has the broadcast rights. Nvidia does not pay for broadcasting rights, and the publishers can turn it off. I suppose, yeah, I do remember. I will say this: the entire last chapter of Final Fantasy VII Remake, the broadcasting thing flips off. I wasn't broadcasting or anything, but you actually, because you get a screenshot every time you get an achievement, and every time you beat a chapter in the Final Fantasy VII Remake, you get an achievement. A little trophy pops up, right? So the trophy popped up for the last chapter, chapter 17, and then it said unable to take screenshot because, you know, your PlayStation 4 always takes a screenshot when you get a trophy because this scene is blocked. So I suppose you're right. Share play could be blocked as well. I didn't try doing that. Maybe I should try doing that. Anybody beat Final Fantasy VII that wants to see? I'm assuming it doesn't work. That's probably part of what goes with it. And Bobby does say Atlas goes after streamers who stream too far in Persona 5. Well, that's a bummer, but that is, yeah, that is something that has been in the news before as well. All right, moving on. Let's move on to Xbox and some things that they're doing in Series X. And everybody wants to know, where's more games for Series X? Because we know Hellblade, Setsuna's Sacrifice 2, and that whole thing is happening. But I don't think we've had a lot of announcements outside of that. And in a tweet this week, because that's the way we get news now, is on Twitter, Phil Spencer, the head of Xbox, talked about what is happening with Xbox Series X, saying, reviewed plans yesterday for continued sharing through launch. Team is doing great work and adapting. I've never been more excited about Xbox plans. We've heard you. You want transparency and authenticity. We plan to keep showing that way. Next step is not too much of a wait. And then in parentheses, games. So, yeah, it's kind of teasing that we know you want more information and you'll get it soon. But we don't know when soon is. Although one could certainly theorize, well, in a non-pandemic world where COVID wouldn't have happened, E3 would have happened in June, and Microsoft was still planning on participating in that. June is not that far away at this point. We're talking less than six or about 6 weeks, right? So, I mean, is there a plan to just do things during the week E3 would have been? Maybe with some of these people that have stepped in to fill in for E3, such as IGN and so forth? What do you think, Logie?
Either that or around the same time. I'd imagine that any time between now and probably June is when we're going to hear something. So I don't think it's hard to imagine that that's going to happen. I don't know if they would necessarily do something through IGN per se, but like I could see them doing their own event around that time.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. They'll probably do their own event, but they might supplement with IGN because IGN will still, you know, they're a media outlet. They're still going to be all about exclusives. So if they get, maybe the trailer gets unveiled at a Microsoft event, but then IGN gets, oh, here's the deeper exclusive on Fable 4 first gameplay outside the trailer. I'm obviously making that up. That's on my wish list of things I would like Microsoft to announce. But let's say that, you know, IGN gets first look at Fable 4 gameplay. They'll still do it as part of their event, right? Even though Microsoft right. might show the trailer at their own thing that they're going to stream on Mixer and, you know, what have you, you know, easily available on Xbox One and so forth.
They've done that even with like E3 stuff where they'll have true. Like the exclusive trailer at the PlayStation event. And then, but we're going to get some extended footage or different trailer on the Xbox event or Activision or whatever.
Maybe Microsoft needs their own treehouse. Like, because that's what Nintendo does. They show the trailers in their little 30-minute direct, and then, oh, Nintendo Treehouse for 3 days will give those deeper dives and so forth.
Yeah, we can bring back the space ponchos.
Hey, I love that E3. the Cirque de Connect, that whole thing with the space ponchos, that was rad.
Yes.
Man, good times. You know what? What I'd give to be rid of this COVID shit and back into the era of space ponchos when that was the joke. All right. Anyway, moving on. Darksakura had to leave, and she was going to talk about this, so I'm probably not going to do this story justice. I apologize in advance, but this was kind of more one of those like human interest stories involving games. A 9-year-old Italian boy has created a game during this whole lockdown situation because, of course, Italy has been going through it a lot of what you're seeing here in the U.S. You know, Italy had it really bad those first few weeks when we were just starting some of our shut-ins and lockdowns and so forth. So the folks in Italy have been locked down for some time, and a fourth grader has taken this time to actually create a video game to play with friends online. And again, another reason why I think this is nice to bring up is because it shows that whole art coming from crappy scenarios type of situation. You know, yes, it is fascinating that a 9-year-old did this, and insert the joke here about how a 9-year-old finished his game before Loki. It's the easy
yes,
swing.
Yes, but that's because he picked something small to do, I'm yes. sure, and he's also a 9-year-old that doesn't have a daytime job.
Right. But the reality is that not only did the 9-year-old create a game, the 9-year-old created a game that was kind of about COVID-19 being the backdrop here. The name of the kid is Lupo Datturi. I hope I said that name right. Sorry if I didn't. He lives on the outskirts of Milan. And, of course, they've been on lockdown since March 8th there. And so he said, I had to stop all the sports I did because of COVID-19. I can't even go to the pond with my dog. Instead of playing sports, skiing, swimming, karate, I have to make do with an exercise bike. So he did some online tutorials and made a game called Serba 20. It's a search and destroy type of game, and you have lasers, but you're in the captain's chair of the Serba 20 spacecraft, and you are fighting COVID-19. You know, again, the kid is 9. It's fine to have a simple plot for a game. A lot of great games have a simple plot. Go back to anything on the Atari 2600. Okay. So Lupo, the child Lupo talks how he's playing with his friends and now wants to do a project on how to teach his friends how to program so they can make their own games. He's getting requests from his teachers to program things, not just games. And that's according to his father. That's very fascinating. What's interesting, I guess folks, there might still be a negative connotation that if you play a lot of video games, you're a nerd. Because his mom commented, I'm not worried because my son is not a nerd. Happy because he's passionate about something that can help him. The fact that he invented a game that has gone viral makes me happy because it motivates him to do even more. So there you go. A COVID-19 commentary piece by a 9-year-old called Serba 20. Meanwhile, I'm struggling to get out of bed on the weekend. So you gotta tip your hat to this kid, and congratulations. And maybe he'll continue to make awesome video games in the future. If he likes sports, maybe he'll program sports video games when he grows up. Who knows? All right. Anyhow, Loki, why don't you take the next story?
All right. So you may remember when Fortnite was released on Android, that they went about some way where you have to sideload it basically onto your device in order to get around having to put it on the Google Play Store. Well, apparently they have decided that after 18 months of being without it, that they're going to go ahead and take part and put it on the Google Play Store. Because apparently, you know, despite the fact that they're going to lose a third, that 30% cut that Google takes, it's, I guess, better exposure. So Google put software downloadable outside of Google Play at a disadvantage through technical and business measures, such as a scary repetitive security pop-ups for download and updated software, restrictive manufacturer and carrier agreements and dealings, Google Public Relations characterizing third-party software as malware, and the new efforts such as Google Play Protect to outright block software obtained outside of the Google Play Store is one of the reasons why they felt pressured to put it on there. They said, we hope that Google will revise its policies in business dealings in the near future so that all developers are free to reach and engage in commerce with the customers on Android and in the Play Store through open services, including payment services that can compete on level playing field. Well, I'm sorry to tell you that's never going to happen, because on the Apple side of the house, you know, there's the whole iOS, you know, App Store that you can't get around that either. And the fact that you could get around the Google Play Store at one point was kind of a nice bonus, but they don't have to do that. So,
yeah, and I know also... I was just going to say, I know Apple takes a lot of crap for things having to go through their store, but at the same time, you know, for the most part, it means the quality is there and you don't have a bunch of, you know, things trying to hijack your phone to mine Bitcoin and things like that. Not to say it's perfect. You know, things have snuck through the store that probably shouldn't have, but it's usually in the news and notable each and every time that happens, you know, so there's gives and takes.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So... It's good at least to be a little bit more accessible to folks, but I know that's not ideal for them.
It's interesting, though, because you would think at this point, like, if you haven't tried Fortnite, are you ever going to? So it's interesting that they, I guess, believe that this is going to open it up to more people putting it on their phone. But they must have really seen, like, you know, maybe comparing to iOS and so forth, like, people just aren't installing Fortnite on their Google phones, Androids, the way they would on other platforms, I guess.
Well, look at your target demo. Like, is, you know, children playing the game? Do youth? I know a lot of children are pretty tech savvy, but even my kids who use technology all the time, they wouldn't know how to do it. I'd have to load that thing on there for them. So, I mean, hell, they don't even know what updates are sometimes when they get pop-up message on the Switch to update software. So, it's very understandable. It's a barrier to entry for some of the more casual players on the platforms and stuff, especially if you're playing a game like Fortnite on a phone or on an Android device like that. I mean, I don't want to categorize someone as more casual doing that, but, you know, I would think that the folks that are on a PC are probably a little bit more knowledgeable on how to do stuff. Plus, it's definitely a lot more accessible on PC, whereas this was still a barrier to entry. And with all the pop-ups, you know, and especially if you're a parent and maybe not too tech savvy yourself, you're like, oh, I don't know. It's telling me that I shouldn't do this. I'm very hesitant of wanting to put it on here. So I don't know. I can see why they want to get around that.
All right. Well, one more story for you guys before we wrap up for the night. And that has to do with Guild Wars. That's right. I'm not even talking about Guild Wars 2. I'm talking about the original Guild Wars. Did you know that game is about 15 years old? It's celebrating its 15th anniversary. And right now, going on in the game, there is a celebration on Embark Beach going on in Guild Wars, with 10 new weapons, one for each profession, on sale for the anniversary vendor, and a new trophy that lets you spawn a boss in one of the 4 endgame locations. The bosses are not new, but they have new skills. They get, I guess, icons from Guild Wars 2, so kind of trying to, you know, I guess, bring some of the Guild Wars 2 into the old Guild Wars, just even if only visual. And obviously, a lot of people from the original game have moved on to Guild Wars 2, but... you know, part of the reason why people loved Guild Wars is that it didn't have a monthly fee. So if you bought it, you can log in right now and play it, if you can remember your login or you still have it installed somewhere, and check out the anniversary. So pretty cool. By the way, if you want to know how popular Guild Wars 2 was, estimated about 1.5 million in 2018. So probably only a fraction of that still on the old school Guild Wars. But I think that is really cool that they are adding some stuff for the anniversary to help people celebrate and acknowledge the game. You know, why not? Blizzard has World of Warcraft Classic, and, you know, sometimes people like to go experience the old games again. Which reminds me, are we ever going to get an update on the future of Final Fantasy XI? I don't think so. I'm starting to think no at this point. It's just done.
Disappointed, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. All right, if you have any questions for us, I'm going to open up the roundtable in our chat room over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. If you have any questions or general statements for our show tonight, please feel free to ask away over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Probably not going to do calls tonight. I'm looking to wrap up here in the next few minutes. But please, if you have any questions, go ahead and ask there. And I know Loki probably has a couple of last-minute stories that he wants to get to. I think
I do.
I thought there was at least one or two stories we didn't put on the show roll tonight.
Sure. Let's take a look here.
Let me read some comments from chat to buy you time here. Phoenix 7726 in our chat says, Rob, Guild Wars 1 had a different skill system to Guild Wars 2 that many old players think is a lot better. Yeah, the games did play a little differently. And you know what? Anytime you release a sequel like that, like even when they did EverQuest 2, there is still going to be people that are going to be loyalists to the old EverQuest. That's why there's not going to be a World of Warcraft 2, I bet. I would be very shocked if they ever did a World of Warcraft 2. If Blizzard wanted to do another MMO, they'd use one of their other properties or something. They're not going to make a World of Warcraft 2 because there's just going to be people that are stuck on World of Warcraft. They just or what you see, I guess what you really see happening, because this is what's happening at Blizzard, is that they evolve the game so much through its expansions that people long for the way the game they used to be. So you have World of Warcraft Classic, and now World of Warcraft the way the game is now. So it's kind of, I guess, different evolution patterns in that way. Phoenix is also asking, do we have any idea on what WoW's current numbers are? No, because Blizzard stopped releasing those numbers because they were slowly going down and down and down, and everybody was screaming doom and gloom, so they just stopped putting the numbers out there. So, no, we don't know. And we don't really know. And when Final Fantasy 14 reports numbers, they only report the number of accounts. They don't really talk about what's active and what's not. It is assumed right now by some that Final Fantasy 14 is the dominant MMO. But we don't know. Nobody's putting out the numbers to justify it. We have to rely on like third-party data that analyzes what people are playing. And otherwise, we don't know.
They should have totally done it like an April Fool's joke to say that they're going to put out Final Fantasy 14 Classic. It's the version one.
There's people that want that. There's people that are asking for that. And I'm like, okay, if you think World of Warcraft Classic is through some rose-colored glasses, then let me tell you, Final Fantasy 14-1 sucked ass and you don't want it. Like, you think you want it, you don't want it. It's bad. All right.
Can we call 14 class or 11 14 classic and just bring that back?
Yeah,
instead?
Bring 11 back. Well, 11 technically hasn't gone anywhere. It's still there, just not on PlayStation or Xbox anymore, but it's still cooking along on the PC. So, Bonds 006 is saying no Pokemon Go news. I don't think they had any major news this week. I don't know if that's teasing us because we tend to talk a lot about what's going on in Pokemon Go in the show. They did a community day. They had the Aubra community day. I did a little bit of it from home. I didn't catch a single shiny, and I was kind of over it.
I haven't played the game in a long time. I just.
Yeah, I guess their news would be that community day happened at home. I like that it was a nice big window to play it, though. I wish they were all like that.
Yeah, so I was going to mention, though, we talked a little bit last week about Corona Relief Done Quick because that was going on while we were recording the show, or at least it just about wrapped up. So they had succeeded in raising over $400,000 towards that their charity as well. So that's pretty awesome. I was watching a little bit of the YouTube clips during the week, so that was pretty cool. Nice. Summer Games Done Quick, currently scheduled for August 16th through the 23rd, so we'll have to wait and see what happens there. And then this was kind of cool. I saw this mod that was put out for Mario 64 called Super Mario Odyssey 64, which basically includes several Mario Odyssey's worlds, like Sand, Lost, and Bowser's Kingdom. They have 80 moons in there, plus Cappy mechanics as well. And the different characters or the different mobs and stuff from the game as well. So go find that out on the internets as well. Thankfully, this is one of those cases where, hey, mod's done. Now I'm going to talk about it and release it before you can get your C&D. So good times.
Hype Mayhem is mentioning in our chat at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. You forgot to mention that the source code to Team Fortress 2 and Counter-Strike Go were leaked and left players open to hacking if an exploit in the source code is found. I did hear about that.
Yes, and I remember Valve had said it wasn't such a big deal because it was really old source code, and so I don't think that anything, a lot of the code has changed since then, so they didn't feel that it was can leave them open to vulnerabilities or anything.
Yeah, it does seem they're trying to laugh it off and sweep it under the rug, but I guess the only way we'll find out is if hackers actually succeed in exploiting the game based on what they find in there, so we'll see. So
yeah,
all right, Well, if that's that, then we're going to go ahead and start to wrap up the show tonight. We're going to go around and get everybody's final thoughts. First off, thank you guys so much for listening to our program. Whether you were here live with us at twitch.tv/VogNetwork on Sunday night, or you listened to us on the podcast feed throughout the week, however you participated with the show, we really appreciate it. Tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if the voices aren't here to put on air, how can we possibly, you know, share more voices? Auto hosts on things like Twitch go a long way, let me tell you. A nice 5-star review on iTunes or things like that, also love that as well. Thank you to everybody that goes the extra mile with all of that stuff. Final thought time. Loki, your final thought.
My final thought is I'd like to work more on my game this week. I did work a little bit on it, but not a whole ton. Mainly because I'm switching from computers and everything. It's kind of put me back behind of things. And I was toying with different art styles and stuff and using different tools to build levels. So I found that my importer that I was using for the voxel stuff isn't working quite right. So I've got to kind of redo that. So that's putting me back a little bit, but I'm still trying to get in the swing of things and do it on a more regular basis.
All right. My final thought is, now that I've beaten Final Fantasy VII Remake, I need another 30-hour game to play through. I guess I still have Nier, and that seems like the one I'm going to gravitate to, but I also know me, and I feel like I'm going to, like, it's time to get back on my Final Fantasy X bullshit, or Final Fantasy XII, and I'm probably going to go back and revisit one of the classics, because I just know how I am, and that's probably what I'll end up doing. But we'll see. Stay tuned. I'll let you know what happens in 7 days. Sound good? All right. That's going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thanks again for tuning in. We will see you next week when we do it all over again. In the meantime, stay safe, stay indoors, help stop the spread, wash your hands, all that good stuff, and take care of yourselves. That's really all we can ask. And have fun gaming online and all that good stuff. Be nice to other people when you play online. Take care. See you next week.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vog Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.